The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. Sam, a wet and wild match day five in certain parts of Japan over the weekend. So a lot to cover from that. And then, looking ahead to a huge international break for the Samurai Blue.
Oh, yeah, it's a massive game first and foremost on Thursday, isn't it? Both teams are having a few issues going into that game with their injuries, COVID and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, but it's a crucial one. And, yeah, we're off the back of an interesting weekend in J1. I was upset about the Friday game. I was looking forward to that one between Marinos and Tosu. But, yeah, the weather, it wasn't playing ball for most of the weekend, which was a shame. And just before we get started, I've got a program. Anyone listening, if there's you hear a whimpering, I promise you it's not me, but I've got J-Talk Dog 2 who has sat next to me. So she may make an appearance at some stage, so sorry about that.
Very good. Well, any special comments are more than welcome. And what is J-Talk Dog 2's name, Sam, just for all of us interested?
She's called Pickle.
Okay.
Yes, she's a Staffordshire Bull Terrier crossed with a Shih Tzu, so she's got a little bit going with her.
Very nice. All right. Well, yeah, welcome aboard, Pickle. And as I said, yeah, any and all special comments are well and truly welcome. Along those similar lines to help us review match day five and also check in on the national team ahead of two huge World Cup qualifiers. It's a great pleasure to welcome Johnny Nicol back to J-Talk. Johnny, how are you going?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good, Ben. Thanks. There's always lots to talk about in Japanese football, and this week's no exception. So I'm looking forward to getting into it with both of you. Thanks for having me back on.
Always a pleasure, Johnny. Thank you very much again for joining us. So, let's begin with the Samurai Blue then, as, they're two huge games, as Sam mentioned off the top. Yeah, this Thursday in Sydney, Australia, the Samurai Blue will visit the Socceroos. And, it's a simple equation for Japan, isn't it, Sam? A win on Thursday night will seal qualification to the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. Socceroos will obviously not lay down. They'll be they've still got some hopes of qualifying automatically themselves. So they're always cracking occasions when these two nations face off. And I'm sure Thursday will be no exception.
Oh, I'm sure, and it sounds very simple, doesn't it, on paper, but it will be anything but that. Australia will be fighting for their life because they have to get a good result when they go to, they've got Saudi Arabia in the final game, so yeah, they'll be all out for victory. It's going to be a difficult one. Japan missing quite a few players, especially up front, so it's going to be really tight, really tense, but yeah, fingers crossed that Japan can get a positive result against Australia. I think a draw should be, you think, with welcoming Vietnam and disrespect to them, but you think they should beat them at home in the second game. So, yeah, fight it out for at least a point, which I imagine is what Moriyasu's plan will be, keep it tight and get away with a 1-1 or something. But, yeah, it's going to be a really interesting game. Yes, they are always great occasions.
Yes, most definitely. So, Johnny, late last week, Hajime Moriyasu named a squad of 27 players for these two games, and he's already had to make a number of alterations to it through injury-enforced withdrawals from Yuya Osako, Hiroki Sakai, and most recently from Daizen Maeda. So how do you think those three withdrawals and the two players that have come in will affect the way that Moriyasu will look to play in these two games, obviously with the main focus being on Thursday in Sydney?
Well, of course, with such a big game like Australia having to win and Australia being at home, you want your most experienced big-name players available, and Sakai and Osako are definitely first choices for Moriyasu, aren't they? Maeda would obviously, he'd bring on a bit of pace, and like Sam said, if they were playing for a 1-1, if they could get in front and they could play long balls in for Maeda to chase and hold up, he would have been an option there too. I think Maya Yoshida's back, so that should definitely help defensively, and I know Moriyasu cops a bit of stick for his kind of style, but this game is almost made for him, isn't it? Like the other team, like Australia, have to beat Japan and then beat Saudi Arabia. They're desperate. And Japan, you'd think, most likely can just play out for a draw and then beat Vietnam at home. So I think, he would obviously want all of those players available, but it's still quite a strong team he's going to put out. we were kind of discussing in the green room, like, who is going to form, who's going to fill that centre forward role? Will it be the untested Ayase Oueda? I'd like to see it, but again, Moriyasu is quite a conservative coach. If I was guessing, I'd say Asano would probably start in the middle with Ito and then Minamino on the left. But again, I think we mentioned that Mitoma could be a possibility with Minamino in the centre. What about you, Sam? Like, how do you see that attack shaping up with Moriyasu coaching it?
You mentioned Moriyasu. I think you're probably right when you say Asano, because he is almost a go-to whenever he's making his first substitutions. Asano is usually one of the first cabs off the rank, and I suppose he's got that pace from the counter-attack, and it would make sense in this sort of game to play him there. I just think the way that they want to set up, like usually with Osaka, he's one really to build up play from, and you bounce things off him, and there isn't really an option that is similar to that. But I would personally go Minamino, just because, first of all, I don't like him on the left-hand side. I think he's a bit wasted there. He scored a lot of goals. Obviously, it was an easy game, I suppose, in the first set of qualifiers, but from that central position, I think he can link up quite well there. It gets Mitoma into the team on the left-hand side, which I've been crying out for ages. He missed the last ones with injury, but is back now and back into full fitness. So yeah, I would try and play Minamino with Mitoma and Ito either side of it. But yeah, I probably do agree with you that Asano will be the way to go. But yeah, Ben, any chance that you see Ayase Oueda being given the chance? He was obviously thrown in at the deep end in a Copa America, so it's not like he's not completely trusted by the officials at the JFA.
Yeah, again, I'd like to see it myself, Sam. Never been a massive fan of Asano, especially from the start in games for Japan. But in a situation like this, with so much riding on it, I can't really see Moriyasu, again, pushing the boat out. That's just not what he does, is it? But I'd expect Asano to get the nod, and hopefully Waiter to come on and make an impact and show that, although hopefully for Japan it'll be a dead rubber in the final game against Vietnam, that he might be worthy of a start in that one if they can take care of business in Sydney. Now, what about at the back, Johnny, where Sakai is obviously a walk-up start whenever he's fit and available at right back? I wonder what he's going to do to replace Sakai. Of course, Yuto Nagatomo usually starts on the left of the back four, but with him finally returning to fitness with FC Tokyo and making his first start of the season away at Kyoto on Saturday, he actually started at right back with Ryoya Ogawa starting on the left. So I wonder whether Nagatomo might get the nod on the right, and that would allow Yuta Nakayama, who was so impressive in replacing Nagatomo in both of the qualifiers in the previous international break, whether it might open the door for him to start, or there'll be obviously plenty of people clamoring for Miki Yamane to just get the nod on the right-hand side of the back four. So again, you're not expecting Moriyasu to push the boat out, are you? But I wonder whether Nagatomo's got enough of a fitness base behind him to start on Thursday night. Which way do you think he might go at right back?
Well, actually, just while I was waiting to come on, I jotted down what I thought the team would be for Thursday, and I put Yamane brackets Nagatomo at right back and Nagatomo brackets Nakayama at left back. I think with Moriyasu, it's definitely Nagatomo is going to play. It's not going to be Yamane and Nakayama. I would say, you know, I always have kittens trying to work out Gamba's started lineup and formation over the last couple of years, and Moriyasu at least is, if nothing but predictable. And I would have to say, given his previous track record, when all of those players have been fit, he would pick Yamane at right back and Nagatomo at left back, with Nakayama then coming on in the second half if Nagatomo runs out of steam. He does seem to be quite predictable, so I would be maybe 70% confident he would go with that option. Nagatomo at right back is a possibility, but I don't think he's really that kind of coach. Would you go along with that, Sam?
Yeah, I think Yamane will start there. I think I'm almost 100% certain that Nagatomo will play this game. It's such an important one. It's a tight one. I'm sure he'll play, get his customary 60 minutes, and then be replaced by Nakayama, which I don't think is sustainable going forward, but that is what it is. And Yamane, I think, has started the season quite well, actually, for Kawasaki. I think he maybe dipped slightly last year, but this year, yeah, he's getting forward a lot more. He's kind of been one of the better creative players at Kawasaki, a team that have struggled a little bit this season compared to usual. So, yeah, I'd agree with you with Yamane. And then he's got another decision to make in centre-back. Like, the last qualifiers, Taniguchi and Itakura played together with Yoshida and Tomiyasu both out. So Yoshida is back now, Ben. So I assume you think he slots straight back in, but who would you replace out of Itakura and Taniguchi?
Ooh, yeah, good one, Sam. I think both of them, yeah, obviously did well in the previous international break. So I would probably, I'd probably go for Itakura, but I wouldn't blink an eye if it was Taniguchi instead. Yeah, I think both of them will be very reliable and dependable. So, yeah, that's me throwing a dart, really. But, yeah, I would go for Itakura. I'll throw it straight back at you, Sam, before we see what Johnny thinks. Which way would you go?
I would start Itakura, I think. He's playing so well in Germany at the moment. He's getting goals, which obviously helps the confidence. But defensively, I think he's playing incredibly well. He's good playing it out from the back. I think Taniguchi is a solid, dependable player. And maybe it might be more in line with Moriyasu's thinking to go with Taniguchi as the safer pair of hands. But I just think I would always try and go with a younger player, especially when there's not necessarily a great deal between the two. And I think, yeah, just the way he's confident at the moment, I would start Itakura alongside Yoshida. But again, I'm with you. I think it's a kind of toss of the coin. I'm not going to be upset one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't really want to disappoint the listeners, but I'm going to make it 3 out of 3 for Itakura. I'd always seen him like as being the number one backup to both Yoshida and Tomiyasu, and then Taniguchi would be the one after that. But then when Sam's saying like that, yeah, Taniguchi's older than Itakura, and the way Moriyasu thinks he might go for Taniguchi, but I would have to be with you. I think the more likely 65-35 choice, even 70-30, would be Itakura to start over Taniguchi.
All right. Well, yeah, I was quite worried when you threw that to me at first, Sam, and I'm relieved to know that you guys share the same opinion. So there you go. We'll hopefully lock that in, and we'll wait and see what Moriyasu does on Thursday night. But yeah, obviously a huge game, and yeah, can't wait to see how Japan line up and then how they get on against the Socceroos, who, we've mentioned it in passing, but obviously have a number of hurdles that they've had to overcome in the build-up to this game as well, with a number of players having to withdraw due to COVID-19 issues, and their coach, Graham Arnold, getting fined for, not for testing positive, but for, breaching protocols and going out for a walk to the beach when he shouldn't have been doing that. So hopefully he'll be past negative to take his spot in the dugout for that huge game. And we'll be reviewing both of the Samurai Blues final two World Cup qualifiers in next week's episode. All right, well, a bit of upheaval for Australia and indeed for Japan in the build-up to Thursday. Some upheaval behind the scenes at Vissel Kobe in the aftermath of yet another game without a win to begin the season. According to their press release, a mutually agreed parting of the ways with manager Atsuhiro Miura. But, I think we all know, Sam, that Miura's been shown the door after, Kobe have failed to win any of their 7 games to start this new J1 season. So, we wondered how long it might take for a change to occur, and as it turned out, they've decided that this international break was the right time.
Yeah, and it's not really a surprise that you can't be a team like Vissel Kobe and going 7 games without a win. He got himself a brief stay of execution with an extraordinary 4-3 victory over Melbourne Victory in the ACL last midweek. It was an unbelievable game, but it's not one that really should have been that close. And they won that game, but it was still a few alarm bells ringing for Kobe, especially defensively in that game. And then this one, it was just kind of predictable. Vissel, they'd had a lot of the ball against Shimizu. They didn't really create too much. They didn't look like scoring too often. And yeah, he kind of paid the price for that. I think generally you have to give Miura a lot of credit, because when he first took that job as a sporting director, nobody thought he was going to do anything, I don't think. And he managed to find a system that worked. It got the best out of Iniesta. It got the best out of the two strikers that came in Muto and Osako, and previously Furuhashi and got that Kobe team, but nobody else had been able to kind of rein in and like focus in the direction and got them to third. So Anki did fantastically well. You could argue he probably had earned a bit more time to turn things around, but I don't think he showed anything that suggested he knew any other way of playing rather than his plan A. And when that completely didn't work at the start of this season, yeah, I think he was a bit stuck. So I think they needed to go in a different direction. Their current caretaker manager, Lewis Planaguma, I think it is, doesn't instill great confidence necessarily after his last job was being sacked at FC Imabari. But yeah, he was the nearest Spanish person on the app that they load up whenever they need a new manager. So there we go. So good luck to him for the however long he's there. It might only be for a couple of games. So they might have other managers maybe based outside of Japan that they're looking into. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see which way they go. My fingers are crossed for Marcelo Bielsa into Japan. I think that would be fantastic. It could be horrendous as well, but that's what I would look forward to. But yeah, interesting times as always at Vissel Kobe.
Yeah, most definitely. So, yeah, your point's well made there, I think, Sam. I, if it was up to me, I probably would have given Miura a little bit more time. But, yeah, I mean, they're very trigger-happy behind the scenes, aren't they, at Kobe? And, well, yeah, I mean, there's no denying that this start to the season has been absolutely horrific. That, ACL qualifier aside, although there were obviously elements of that game that were quite difficult to watch as well, but they ultimately did squeak through. And we wondered, Johnny, whether that might have just been what they needed to kickstart things. But then the trip to Shimizu rather on Saturday, and a chance against a fellow struggler and a team that have been slow to begin the campaign as well. But Kobe were unable to break the deadlock and left with another point after a 0-0 draw. But yes, another game where they failed to win is ultimately done for Miura. So what can you tell us about Planaguma then and his time in J3 with FC Imabari?
Not a whole much, as I said in the green room, but he appeared to be there for just over a season, and I think he managed the first season they were in the J League in J3, and he did reasonably well, albeit I think teams recently promoted from the JFL have had a lot of success in their first season in J3, where people don't know much about them, and Imabari do seem to be a team with a bit of financial backing and kind of going places. But then they had that kind of second season syndrome and got off to quite a ropey start in the second season, and he was let go. And honestly, I didn't actually know he was at Kobe until he was announced as the successor to Miura today. And we haven't mentioned it yet, but maybe more controversially is Hideki Nagai, who was at the centre of the power harassment scandal at Tokyo Verde last year, and I believe still hasn't been cleared by the league to coach again. I don't want to talk about him too much because I'm not convinced that appointment is actually going to be approved, or that there maybe is a developing situation. So let's leave it for now. I agree with both of you guys. I think there's no surprise, we know how football works, that Miura's gone after 7 winless games. And, you know, this game against Shimizu, I think the closest he came to scoring was Valdo's miss kick that almost went into his own net. My kind of feeling with this situation, that Miura on paper is Kobe's most successful manager with that third place finish last year. I kind of feel like if you're going to replace the most successful manager in your club's history, you need two things. One is a good reason to get rid of him. And I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. I'm not convinced that they do. And two, kind of coming back to your question, Ben, about the manager and also the sporting director have been announced, you need a good succession plan. If Bielsa is the genuine succession plan, then yeah, you do have a good one. If it's just appoint Planaguma and then kind of see how it goes, then that's where are they really going? Because I feel any coach that comes in is going to have the issue we've already mentioned, like Osako and Muto are out injured. There's obviously been COVID or injury problems at the back with Kikuchi and Ikuda missing time and coming in. And also they've got the schedule's really going to heat up in April when they've got loads of J1 games and also the ACL. So, I mean, it's always talked about that the money that's there at Vissel, but it's not as easy as it sounds. I think there's a lot of teams in J1 that a lot of the players are paid very similar, and it's maybe five or six players that get a bit more, or in Kobe's case a lot more. So once you start struggling a bit, as you saw last year with Gamba, Cerezo, Kashiwa, once you get into a bit of a rut, it is very difficult to pull yourselves out. I think Kobe will improve. I think they would have improved even if they'd kept Miura. But yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how things pan out in the coming days and months.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, loads of J-Preds, they just lie in rubble at the moment, don't they? With Kobe struggling so mightily to begin the season. And indeed, Reds as well, although as we'll come on to later, they might have finally begun to hit their stride after a big win on Saturday. But yes, so it finished a goalless at Nihon Daira. A bit of a running battle between Yuito Suzuki, the home striker, and Hiroki Ikura, the Kobe keeper. And up the other end, Yuya Osako tested Shuichi Gonda on a couple of occasions. But yes, and neither team able to break through, although Andres Iniesta, the Kobe substitute, did have the ball in the net with a couple of minutes left. But yes, the linesman had his call correct that the ball had crossed the byline before Rio Hatsuse hooked it back across goal for Iniesta to volley in. Okay, so we're not spending a massive amount of time on what actually happened in each of these games. So don't worry, listeners, we're going to tell you the results, of course, and who scored and, you know, a general overview of the games. But as we've reached the first international break of the new J1 season, we wanted to have a bit of a check on how some of the new arrivals at each J1 club have gotten on through the first month or so of the new campaign. A lot of these players will have been ones that we mentioned on our preview episodes, and maybe another a few more have risen through the cracks and joined out of either high school or university, and maybe escaped my attention in the preview episodes, but have already gotten a chance at some of these clubs. So if we look at Shimizu first, Sam, they brought in a few players, obviously, throughout the off season. I don't know if there were any real headliners, but which ones have impressed you so far? Which ones have started to fit in at Nihon Daira?
For me, and this one makes me very happy, is Yuta Kamiya. I think he's been arguably their best player so far this season in a team that has been depleted of their best players, like Thiago Santana, Masuoka, Carlinhos, all have been out. So Kamiya is the one who's had to take up the mantle of being the most creative. I just like the way he starts. He can play either behind the striker or out on the wing, but the way he manages to drift in from either side and some of the passes that he creates, and that one ball last week to Takahashi for the goal is just an example of what he's really brought to that team. He's one of those that I thought Kashiwa should have kept and built a team around. I didn't realise that they had Mateo Savio and they could just flick a switch on him and then that would work. But yeah, Kamiya I thought has been very good. And the one disappointment I would have is Kishimoto, who I thought was terrific last year for Tokushima. And I kind of expected him to just come into this team playing from the off, but really he's not been able to get past Hiroki Hara. He's been limited to the Levain Cup appearances and a couple of cameos off the bench, but just hasn't got going, which I think is a real shame. And I think if he could find the form of last season, that'd be a very good player for Shimizu. But yeah, it's just not worked for him. But yeah, after Shirasaki as well has come in, he's just been as solid as you would imagine. I think he's kept things ticking over in midfield, but without any real headlines. But yeah, Kamiya for me is the one that has looked the best. But Osei Hun has just come into the country and we might see him after the international break. And if he can start, he scored quite a few goals last season in Korea. So I think the main signing there in an excitement point of view is yet to come for Shimizu. But given the circumstances, I think Kamiya has acquitted himself pretty well.
Okay, then. So, there wasn't a real banner name, but yeah, Kamiya has done the best of the new arrivals at Shimizu. What about at Kobe then, Johnny? Some of their signings were obviously bigger names. Tomoaki Makino, probably the headliner in terms of name recognition, at least. And Koya Uruki, of course, came with him over from Urawa. Makino started the first four games, but since then has had to do with a spot on the bench. Uruki started the first game of the season, and then return to the starting lineup on Saturday away at Shimizu, while otherwise Takehiro Ogihara is probably the other bigger name. Of course, he got sent off in the first game of the season, but has made four starts in total. So, which of them have, I guess, have settled in the best, do you think, at Vissel?
Well, I guess as it, people who have just listened, things haven't gone particularly well at Vissel this season. So it's a bit more negativity for me, I'm afraid. I think Makino started the first game at right back, which was rather bizarre. And then he's obviously, like you said, he's drifted onto the bench, and even had Leo Osaki was starting ahead of him. So, I mean, you would think a player of his kind of quality and experience, when things do settle down at Kobe, he will have a much bigger role to play. But at the moment, it hasn't really worked out. Ogihara obviously had a disastrous start, getting sent off against his old club Nagoya on his debut. And while I think he is a solid player, I think, you know, we mentioned with Miura that midfield diamond formation. I think especially with Muto and Osako out, I would be playing a 4-2-3-1 and maybe having Iniesta in that number 10 role behind the main striker. And then you've got Ogihara, Yamaguchi and Samper. And I think those three players are amongst Kobe's best 11 players, but I think one of them has to be out of the team on a weekly basis for it to work. That's obviously, Kobe have more qualified coaches than me, but I think Ogihara, yeah, he's solid, but was it really the signing they needed? I think probably when we come to Marinos, they've actually replaced him quite quickly and quite straightforward, so he may come good later on. And then the last one you mentioned there was Yuriki, which, I mean, again, because Ogihara hasn't really been played in his regular position. Yuriki is a winger who's playing in a team that don't play with wingers at the moment. So I don't know how the scouting to the signing, how they've sat down and saying, we're playing with a midfield diamond. The players we're going to bring in are Ogihara and Yuriki. They don't seem like natural fits. So it's a bit tough for them to be critical of them, as it is a bit of Makino playing at right back when they're not really being played in the positions that they've made their name as. So, yeah, what the new coach does, because like Plenaguma likes to play 4-4-2, or he has played 4-2-3-1. If he has Ogihara sitting in front of that back four and he has Yuriki down the left wing, I think Yuriki made quite a nice run and created a chance against Espos when he went down the wing. I think that might work a bit better. But, I mean, Sam, what, I know we don't really know much about the new coach, but if you were going into Kobe, would you be looking to change that kind of midfield shape, or do you think the diamond is the way it works best?
Well, I mean, it's difficult because the main thing that Kobe have to work on in their midfield is how to get the best out of Iniesta and then not expose Iniesta to do the defensive work. So you can't have him as part of a midfield two or a midfield three, for example. So, yeah, one of the ways is to have him as that number 10, but you then get kind of, if you have him as a number 10, then you're only allowed the two in midfield. And I don't know if Ogihara does the running enough. I don't know, because Yamaguchi is not a sitter. Like, at Marinos, he played with Kida, who would always be sitting, so he'd always cover you, Ogihara, when necessary. But if he was playing alongside Yamaguchi wants to be in the box at the other end, so you don't get that cover. You leave yourself quite open. And then if you want to bring Samper in as that holding midfielder, then really you need three, so it leaves a gap of, okay, where do I fit Iniesta? And you might have to chuck him out to a wing somewhere. So, yeah, it's a really awkward situation, which is what a lot of managers have the issue with at Kobe before Miura settled on that diamond, which worked perfectly for the four midfielders they had last season. And you said it best earlier, like the players didn't really fit in the ones that they signed, because Ogihara doesn't fit into one of those, I don't know what number it is, but one of the side midfielders of the diamond. Like Yamaguchi is such energetic going back and forth, box to box. Ogihara doesn't have that, unfortunately. And then when he plays at the base in the way that Samper does, it's quite a unique position in the way that Samper drifts in behind the defence to pick up the ball and plays that role. And just Ogihara was just going, I have no idea what I'm doing here. So he got lost. Makino, I think, is, I've said it a few seasons now, in a back four, I don't think he's good enough. At 34 now, I don't think he's got the pace to recover. He was much better those days under Petrovic at Reds, where he was that attacking left-sided centre-back. That was his perfect position. But unfortunately, it's quite a niche position that not every team wants to play with. And I think he gets found out in this Kobe team, which is why Kobayashi and now Osaki have been put ahead of him. And then, as you said, with Yuruki, they're not playing wingers. Why did you sign a winger? So, yeah, it's been a really interesting bit of recruitment from Kobe. It hasn't worked out, but maybe with a new manager, he looks at these pieces and then can mould them. But it's such a difficult one when you've got Iniesta has to play, obviously, but he causes a few issues going backwards the other way. So it's just, how do you solve a problem like Andres?
Oh, yes, the eternal question, Sam. Very good. All right, well, that's something for Planaguma to work on over the international break then. And, Kobe, their rough start to the season continued. And, trying to fit round pegs into square holes by the sounds of it from the analysis from the two guys there. So, things can surely only get better for Kobe after the international break. We shall wait and see. All right, well, let's continue on the Kansai tip. After talking about Kobe, we'll head over to Osaka and Johnny's Gumba side. Although, unfortunately, Johnny, it's not great news, is it? After Saturday's home defeat at the hands of Fukuoka, there was a stirring late fight back from the hosts, but unfortunately, they were already three goals down in the game by the time Yuya Fukuda struck an excellent goal for Gumba in the 82nd minute, and then Leandro Pereira headed in the first minute of stoppage time. But earlier on, Jordi Crooks had scored an excellent opener for Avispa in the 10th minute. Tatsuya Tanaka, who was involved in the move for the opener, headed in Avispa's second just before the hour from a Crooks cross, although luckily for Fukuoka, Wanma, who was stationed just ahead of Tanaka, didn't get a touch on his attempted header. Otherwise, Tanaka would have been offside. And then, the unfortunate call, Yanagi Sawa sliced in a Takeshi Kanemori cross past the keeper, Kei Ishikawa, for an own goal in the 81st minute. Yeah, seconds later, Fukuda got Gumba back into the game, but it didn't quite happen. On the afternoon, Johnny, where your club honoured your captain, Shu Kurata, for his 350th J1 appearance against Kawasaki earlier in the month. Unfortunately, your side weren't able to claim 3 points or even snatch one at the death on Saturday.
Yeah, I think two of my worst fears were realised on Saturday. That the first one was that Gamba would put in their worst performance of the season when I was on here the following Monday. And then the second was that Fukuoka would finally get some reward from what has actually been a few fairly decent performances. That I think they were actually in the relegation zone before this game, but I think the quality of their play before that, they'd just been a bit unlucky. It wasn't really down to their actual level of performance. And I thought Fukuoka were very good in this game. They're pressing, that they never stopped working, and they put Gamba under all sorts of pressure right from the start. I think Maya midfield, he was excellent again. And as you mentioned, I think a couple of times here, Jordi Crooks got a goal and an assist, and he really tore Keisuke Kurokawa at left back for Gamba to shreds. He had so much time and space, and he was the destroyer in chief for Gamba. They've had a tough start to the season. I think Fukuoka will finish in the top half this year, which makes four of the first five opponents Gamba have played, teams that I think will be quite near the top of the league. I thought the previous week we drew 1-1 with Jubilo, and it wasn't a great result, but you could kind of see what Katanasaka was trying to do. Here, though, like the home form has been dreadful for the past year or more, and this had all the hallmarks of last year, like a soft goal given away early on, and then it looked like Fukuoka were going to get a second. And then Gamba gradually got more and more into the game, and they sort of regained the momentum. But then because they're chasing a game again, they just get caught out in the counter two times. Yanagisawa is obviously, it looks comical, the own goal. It's unfortunate. I almost feel like if that goes into Rosehead as he intended it, it would probably have finished 2-0 to Fukuoka, because I think when it went to 3-0, it's like that seemed to light a spark under Gamba, which at least was positive to see that they fought back. And I think that's that they've scored in every game this season, league and cup. We're leaking so many goals, because that's the fourth home game they've played league and cup this year. They've drawn one and lost three, and they've conceded at least twice in each of them. We are scoring. Pereira's got two now. Onose's got two. Fukuda's got two. I think five of the seven league goals this season have come in the last 15 minutes. I don't know why we're only capable of putting decent balls into the box in the last minute. But yeah, losing Usami, we've had injury problems. It's not a disastrous start. We've got better games coming up in April where hopefully things can pick up. But yeah, I'll finish this by praising Fukuoka again, because I thought they were very good, and there were definite signs. There's been signs all season that they're actually a pretty solid team. Lukian hasn't done it yet, but all the parts from last season are still there. So yeah, I think if I was a Fukuoka fan, I'd be looking forward quite positively. Gamba, there's still concerns, but I think they're still going to be kind of somewhere in that mid-table mix. How did you see things, Sam?
I'm going to continue the praise of Fukuoka. I give you another. You've never come on with very many Gamba victories in the last year or two, so I don't want to pile on. I thought Avispo were fantastic, and the best thing I like about Avispo is usually when they play against a team that drops into a three at the back system, they just match up and just go kind of cautious and safe and match up. This time they played 4-4-2. They were looking to put their game on against Gamba. They were looking to put them under pressure, and they just create a lot of chances. They took Lukian out of the fire, which was probably a good thing to do. And that's not like Van Maar's the greatest striker in the world. He definitely isn't. But things were falling for him a little bit more than Lukian. And Crew came in. They played Tanaka as well, which I think are the best two wingers that they have available. I mean, he has liked Kanemori a bit this season. Sugimoto has had a few starts. But I think these two are their best. And they just looked threatening every time they went forward. There are strange issues at the back for Gamba, which, considering you've had Shoji and Miura and last season Kim Yong-won, three very experienced international footballers, for them to be so all over the place for like a year and a bit now is just baffling to me. And I don't really understand why they can't get it together and be a little bit... Because, yeah, Yannick Issawa gets the own goal, but it's not just his fault. It's not him being completely out of position. He's being dragged apart by the defence that should be held together by Shoji Miura and just isn't for whatever reason. And Avispa, I think, except for the last few minutes where they conceded a few goals, but generally they show how it is to set up with a back line and to be really rigid and organised. Douglas Crawley was back, which is crucial for them to have him back in the side alongside Mia. I think they're very solid. They've got that base. And as I've said previously, I thought they'd played really well in most games so far this season without the luck going their way. This time they got a little bit of it, but they ran out worthy winners. And yeah, I think, yeah, I'm not 100% sure I can guarantee them a top half finish, but definitely safe from relegation. I think they should be able to build on this. It was a very positive performance.
All right, yeah, so good stuff from Avispa to help calm the nerves of all of their supporters. Yeah, no panicked emails from Daniel H this week. So, yeah, he will have been very satisfied, I think, with, events at the Suita City Stadium on Saturday. Although, yeah, a little bit hairy in the last few minutes. But, yes, running out the worthy winners, as we've said. All right, so, Johnny, let's chat about some of the new arrivals into Gamba then. But before we do that, I wanted to get your thoughts on, obviously, the tragic news of Takashi Usami's Achilles injury. It's heartbreaking. Of course, we'd celebrated in the off season when he decided to obviously stay on at the club in the wake of rumored interest in him from Kawasaki. So it was great to see him stay on, and we hoped that he would be able to fire Gamba back up the table this season, and then for him to suffer such a devastating injury so early on in the campaign. Well, it must have hit everybody really hard, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I think not normally drawing 2-2 at home with Kawasaki would be a cause for celebration. And unfortunately, there's a few things went wrong towards the second half of that game. I managed to get tickets for that. It was really good seats in row six. But unfortunately, it left me quite close to the incident when it happened. And you could almost hear like a noise. I thought he'd maybe broken his ankle at first. And you know it's bad because even the Kawasaki players that weren't that close to the incident kind of stopped and called on the physio, and he did the X sign like right away. And I think it was at that time in the game, you know, Usami went off and Mitsuki Saito was starting, and he went off, and then the momentum really swung to Kawasaki, that they brought on Yanaga and Kozuka, I think. But it was just, that you could kind of feel around the place, that's a bad injury for Usami. And then obviously our worst fears were realized when his Achilles is snapped, and he's had surgery on it. But You know, I'm no doctor, but I would be very surprised if he's back this season. So Gamba are going to have to find a way around that. Against Jubilo, I think they controlled large parts of the game, but there was a lack of cutting edge. You could really, because Usami's such a leader in the attack, like in the first half that Gamba were attacking down to the goal near where I was, and just like up close seeing the kind of pace and how he's just pinging balls between like Miki Yamane, who's an international right back, finding players. The accuracy of his passing is like up close, it's almost like poetry at times, and Gamba are going to be missing that. I mean, I guess it's slightly more positive. There's obviously been Masaki Higashiguchi's been out all season, and it was announced he'd had surgery. They have done an interview, I think, with Higashiguchi, and his injury might not actually be as bad as it sounds. He said potentially if it all goes according to plan, 6 to 8 weeks, which would put him back before the end of May. It could take longer, obviously. Knee surgery is not that simple, but yeah, Usami, there's no Usami. There's still a week or so left of transfer window, whether they might bring in someone. I mentioned Yamato Majida from Oita as a temporary fix, or whether they go with Ishige, Onose, Pereira, Patrick, Yamami, everyone stepping up. Obviously, Gamba had gone with a Vissel Kobe diamond midfield, which kind of morphed into a 4-2-3-1, and there's formation issues, like Sam mentioned, that the defence have been switching between a back three and a back four. I don't want to step on your toes because a few players could be available from next month, but yeah. Overall, it's not good news for Gamba, but it's a chance for someone like Yamami or even maybe Jiro Nakamura to step up later in the season. We'll keep our eyes peeled.
All right then. So what about the new arrivals into Gamba then, Sam? We've seen Mitsuki Saito start the last three games now that he's up to speed. How's he looked? Yamami, of course, well, he's not a new player, is he? Because he burst onto the scene last season. But yeah, he's made the substitute appearances in the first four games of the season, but wasn't on the bench over the weekend. Shota Fukuoka, who came in from Tokushima, made his first start in the previous game, but didn't come off the bench here. And Hideki Ishige has started the last two games, and three in total. So of the new arrivals into Gamba, I guess the main interest was in Saito at the start of the season. So how's he looked to you so far?
Yeah, I think he's probably been the most positive. He obviously missed the first three games. He had such a long time out at Rubin Kazan and then didn't play at all, I don't think, last year. So it was taking him a little while. He's kind of got a few minutes under his belt. He's increased that as he's gone on. I think, yeah, he adds a bit of bite in midfield, kind of like a terrier in there. I just think he's the perfect player to kind of set the tone in a midfield. And, once he gets a bit more fitness, I think, he will turn out to be the best signing that Gamba have made, I believe. Although Darwin is coming in, he's an interesting one. I don't know too much about him, although he is very highly regarded by my colleagues in Brazil. So hopefully he comes in and forms a really good partnership with Saito. As for with Ishige, I feel for Ishige because I think he was coming in as like a rotational option. He might have a few games for start a couple, have a few off the bench and just be kind of an impact player. But now he's been thrust into that limelight with Usami out injured, and he has to kind of be Usami, which is so difficult. I mean, it's something that I think Usami has struggled with when he has had to carry the load for Gamba in terms of creativity, in terms of goals, and he's not always managed it. And for now, Ishige to have to step into that breach, I feel for him a little bit. I think he's played okay, but not really got up to the heights of maybe, I don't know, it's a different league, but last season at Okayama he played so well. I don't think he's quite got there either. And Yamami burst onto the scene, didn't he, last year? And again, I think he's looked decent in his cameo appearances, but again, not quite hit the heights that maybe you were hoping for when you just saw him initially. And yeah, he was kind of left out of the squad last weekend. And the other one was Fukuoka, who I thought was a bit dodgy in a couple of games that I've seen him. So yeah, not great. But you obviously watched them maybe a bit more intently than I do, Johnny. What have your thoughts been on the new signings and anyone else in the squad that maybe has stepped up this season or kind of dropped their levels?
I think first of all, on Yamami, is believed in the Gamba support because obviously he was a university student. His graduation was last Friday. I know he was in the stadium watching the game on Saturday, but it was believed that his absence was something to do with his graduation ceremony, and that's why he was left out. And I kind of agree with you. he's almost made a rod for his own back by scoring that brilliant goal against Shimizu. You're kind of expecting like Kaoru Mitoma-esque things from him. So I'm sure it will come. And he got a couple of goals against Oita in the Levan Cup. And I think I saw him playing against Cerezo in the Levan Cup. He had a good chance he didn't quite take. But yeah, it would have been more ideal if Usami had been there, and then Yamami would have kind of learned from him. But he'll make his own way, I'm sure. I agree with you with Saito, and I like the fact that you also compared him to a breed of dog, which I've been doing regularly in my blogs. I'm not he can speak a good bit of English, Saito, so I don't know if he's reading it, he might be a bit offended. But just the impact he made, like against Frontale, was the first league game he started, and yeah, he was in there getting stuck and winning the ball back against Jubilo last week again. That's really what I think Fukuoka did well against him this week, because I think Nakamura and Maya really helped to neutralise him, but he has done very well. And I think a couple of Gamba fans questioned my selection of him as being the best signing that when I put out that predicted lineups post, but he's definitely stood up well. Dawan trained last week, and I think because Gamba playing in the Van Cup against Kashima this weekend, I think he'll probably play some part this weekend. Apparently he knows Matias Savio from the days at Flamengo, so if he can have a similar level of performance to Matias Savio, then I think we'll be more than happy. And it also would help to move like Kurata further forward. It might be able to help the kind of fill the Usami void. I agree a bit with Fukuoka. I think because last year, Tokushima, they had that run of three games, didn't they, when someone hit it off someone else and it went into the back of the net. And yeah, he almost did that against Jubilo, whacking it off Okuno twice. I think the others, yeah, Kwon Kyung-won, he trained last week again, but then he's off with South Korea. We'd kind of hoped they would have left him with us, because Korea have obviously qualified for the World Cup already, and he's been training with a club or training with national teams over there, but he hasn't played a game in a few months. So I would have rather he played for us than go and potentially just sit on the bench for them. And I don't really want to stir up any Japan versus South Korea stuff, because you say who's the best or who's the better players. But over the last decade or so, the results have been quite similar. So with that simplistic logic, I would say that someone who's played as often and as regularly as Kwon has for the Korean national team should, in theory, be one of the better defenders in the league. But as you said, Sam, yeah, we've had Shoji and Miura and Kim Young-won, and it's not quite worked out that well. So, you know, fingers crossed, if they've got those three there, they can get into the Katonosaka 3-4-2-1 system every week. But yeah, it's been a bit up and down. Saito has definitely been the standout. I go with you with Ishige. He's been kind of moved around a bit and hasn't done too much. And the great hopes are Dawan and Kwon Kyung-won.
Rightio then. So before we move off this game then, what about the new arrivals at Fukuoka? We've obviously spent a lot of time already this season detailing the struggles of Lukian in front of goal. And as Sam said, he was taken out of the firing line here. And let's be polite and say that he was rested rather than dropped for this final game before the international break, with Wanma preferred up front, and then Lukian coming on for the last half hour. On the flip side, Tatsuya Tanaka was handed his first league start of the season. And that bore fruit. As we said, he played his part in the opening goal and then scored the second himself. So, you've just seen these at first hand, Johnny, and you were full of praise for Fukuoka and their overall performance. So yeah, what did Tanaka add to this side that they were missing? I mean, it's not the manager flicked a switch, put Tanaka in the team, and suddenly they won their first game of the season. But obviously, yeah, he provides something, and obviously that was on display on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a masterstroke putting Tanaka in the team, because obviously he was at Gamba for about 4 months, and ever since he's left, he's always been a thorn in our side. He scored last year for Urawa when they won at Panasonic Stadium. I kind of see, I agree with Sam that Crooks and Tanaka are the best two wingers, but when I kind of think about that Fukuoka team, especially the style of play, it's very important for them to have four players they can kind of rotate. So they've got Sugimoto and Kanemori as well. So I think even like Crooks played very well, he'll probably play the next game, and Tanaka, I'd imagine, would keep his position. But they have those players to kind of rotate with. I felt, Tanaka's problem has always been his consistency. So, yeah, he gets a run in the side, he plays quite well, and then he kind of drifts away, and then they can maybe bring the other players in. But yeah, he was a tireless performer up and down that left wing, and he can also play in the right wing as well. I mean, yeah, his goal, it's hard to credit him too much because, like I said, yeah, Crooks was running rings around Kurokawa and he had all the time in the world to put it in. And that Gamba defence was so all over the place that, you know, Juanma Delgado and Tanaka were queuing up. But I think he hasn't started playing so much at the beginning of the season. But I think as the season goes on, I know Sam mentioned last year that maybe they were a bit lacking. That was an area they'd have to upgrade, the wide midfield players. I think he gives another option because maybe a club like Fukuoka, they, I don't want to sound bad, they maybe can't attract like elite level players. So they almost have to make do with players who can play 10 or 15 good games. And if you've got two of those, they can play in the same position, 10, 15 good games. Almost like they've got a right back with Maejima and Yuzawa. Neither of whom are brilliant players, but they can get by with them for half a season. I think that's really where Tanaka will fit in. Lukian, yeah, at least in his defence, he's only really replacing John Mary, who they wouldn't play last season anyway. So they do have like Delgado and Yamagishi, who are, they were very good in this game. That it's easy to write them off. Juanma Delgado is not everyone's cup of tea, but he caused Gamba's defence a lot of problems. So I think Lukian will come good. They don't need him to score that many goals. I think John Mary only got 5 last year. I mean, if Lukian was to come in and score 15 goals or something, you could be looking at Fukuoka challenging for the ACL. So they do have a bit of time. They've got other players available. So I think he will come good. I'm not 100% confident, but I think he might. What about you, Sam? What's your take on kind of like Tanaka and Lukian and maybe also Yuta Kumamoto at the back, who's played he didn't play this game, but he's played a couple of games earlier in the season.
Yeah, he's played, what, 2 Levan Cup ties, and then he played the 2 previous league games. I think Grawley missed out on one, and then the other one they went to a back three against Consadole and just kind of shut up shop and just shut them down. And he played pretty well, especially in that first game against Sapporo. I think he was quite comfortable in that back three, and he had Grawley and Mieri either side of him just to kind of guide him through it a little bit. But against Kashua, I think he started quite shakily, as Kashua started very well. The movement, I don't think he really got to grips with it as much as maybe would have what they needed him to, and Grawley would have done if he was playing. But I think he's a serviceable backup, and because obviously they've got Tatsuki Nara, who is close to hope to a return to fitness. So yeah, I think as a fourth choice, though, I think he's a very solid defender. And Maejima, I thought, played very well in that opening game, and he grabbed his goal, but generally he was like up and down that wing. Like, it was such a big loss to lose Salomonson. I don't think Maejima is anywhere near the quality of Salomonson, probably not the consistency either, but yeah, I thought he played very well and took to that role well and created chances from that position. So it's a shame that he then got injured in his second league game and we haven't seen him since. And then I agree with everything you said about Tanaka. Consistency has been his issue, but when he's absolutely on it, I think him and crew from either side can be fantastic, especially when you play with a target man in up front with Delgado or Juanma, and they're perfect players for them. And maybe with Lukin, you might need a bit more intricate. That might be why he's gone with Kanemori and Sugimoto on occasion. So, yeah, just can Tanaka get consistency is the issue. And then I do think Lukin will come good. I still don't understand why John Mary didn't play more games last season, because he generally did score when he was given a bit of an opportunity, and I thought he was a really good player, but that's gone, and eventually it will fall for Lukian. His luck will turn, and I think he will score. I don't know if he can quite get to 15 of the way he started, but let's say 8, 10, and that's a reasonable return that he can maybe hope for. But yeah, hopefully, maybe when he gets his first goal, it will all click and then he'll go on a wonderful run, because there are signs, even though he's not worked for him, I think there are signs there that there's a good striker in there. It's just the roll of the dice is not going for him at the moment. But yeah, eventually, I'm sure if Avispa keep playing well, it will turn for him.
All right. Well, yeah, he's no Yuki Kakuta, is he? But yeah, he's still got plenty going for him there, Lukian. And yeah, so Fukuoka, a first victory of the season. Well done to them. But commiserations to Johnny and Gamba supporters for that 3-2 defeat at home on Saturday. The other half of Osaka, well, they had it slightly better. last Saturday. But yeah, they their game also ended in frustration as they twice took the lead at home against Sapporo, but ultimately had to settle for a point after a 2-2 draw. The first half hour was lit up by excellent goals from each side. Hiroto Yamada put the hosts ahead in the 25th minute, and then Daihachi Okamura headed in a corner at the far post on the half hour to equalise for the first time for Sapporo. But then just past the hour, Okamura played his part in one of the weirdest goals you're ever likely to see. But yeah, I'm sure this clip will be shared all around the world as well. And absolutely, terrific ballet skills from Okamura. But yeah, unfortunately, it's ended up with him having egg on his face as he tried to clear the ball from basically right in front of goal, touched the ball with his plant foot, which took it out of reach of his right foot, which he hoped to clear with. He then did a 360-degree spin, managed to keep his balance, but then slid in to try to clear the ball under the attentions of Bruno Mendes. But Bruno Mendes blocked his clearance, and the ball flew in past the Sapporo stand-in keeper, Koki Ohtani, who was filling in for Takanori Sugano, who was out of the team. And, on a mysterious afternoon of goals, we're going to come on to another one later on has left us all scratching our head as to how it's been determined who scored it. The great mystery of Sapporo's second equaliser in this game, is it credited to 19-year-old striker Taika Nakashima? Well, it is according to the official J-League statistics, but if you're surfing the internet basically on any other website apart from the official J-League website, you will be of the opinion that the goal was given to Takuro Kaneko, who he crossed in from the right-hand side, and Nakashima attempted to get his head on it. According to the J-League, he did and scored his first J-League goal in the process. But as I say, elsewhere, Kaneko has been credited with the goal. And, I've got fantasy points in the bank that said that, it was Kaneko's goal. So I'm certainly happy with that. Johnny, did you have a thought on whether Nakashima got a touch or not? And on this game in general, it was it did look at a very entertaining one.
Yeah, the slapstick defending seemed to be all the rage in Osaka last weekend. I think Ohtani was obviously in for Sugino, and I think, was it 9 corona cases in the Sapporo camp before this game? I made it from my kind of stats that I think Ogashiwa, they confirmed, was injured, and then there was 6 players that had played the previous game that were out from this one. So I think Sapporo, despite the sort of comic nature of the second goal they conceded, I think they will be quite happy with the 2 points. And Ohtani gave the ball away badly for the first goal, and then I think Kim Jin-hyun sort of returned the favour by being kind of no man's land for the corner for the second. Kaneko is obviously, anyone who's listened to me on here, he's one of my favourites in J1, and I think he's been a kind of slow start for him and Sapporo, but I only caught the highlights here, but he did seem to be heavily involved, and as one of the senior players in attack, he really needed to take things upon himself. I personally thought it was his goal. I think Nakashima has a very, very tightly shaved head. I think if he'd had a few more hairs on there, he might have got just a hair to it, but he didn't. But I'm sure, I think that's officially his first ever J1 goal, as it was Hiroki Yamada's first goal for Cerezo in this game. It's interesting because I think there's another forward I wanted to talk about in the Nagoya Kashiwa game. But, because we talked about the Japan national team, that the under-23s are also in Dubai for a tournament. And talking to a couple of Japanese people, it's very, very clear that, the under-23, the future Olympic team, there's like most Japanese teams, that there's a ton of good wingers and number 10s, but a real dearth at that centre-forward position. So Nakashima scored a few goals in the Levan Cup, and he's quite a tall player. He's got a bit about him. So I think he's someone they've got quite high hopes for. And, hopefully he can kind of kick on and develop. I am a Gamba fan, but I would say, when we're talking about Kansai clubs, at the moment, if I was a Cerezo fan, I'd probably be feeling the happiest out of the four Kansai teams. I'd have them at the moment as most likely to finish highest out of the four. they've had a few injuries, and obviously there's players to come into the country. 6 points from five games with all the kind of issues they've had, I don't think Kogiku would be too disappointed. What about you, Sam? Would you go along with that? Or Serizo, the Kansai team that should be most happy with things, or am I down the wrong track with that?
No, I think so. I think they've played better than their points total would suggest, although this game they've got to be disappointed. When the opposition comes to you with nine players out due to COVID, at home you've got to beat them, and they didn't here, even though Sapporo tried to give them a helping hand with a couple of chances. But yeah, I do think Cerezo generally have played pretty well. Once they can finally get Inui, Kiyotake, Jean-Patrick playing in the same team, and then maybe, I don't know what's happened to Adam Taggart, but if they find him and put him up front, then maybe there's a really good team there. And I said before the season that with that squad, there is a potential for this team to be an outside run to the ACL. They haven't started well enough, I don't think, for that to really be the case, although it is quite a tight league. But yeah, I think he got Yonish to come back into that team as well. So it really does look, I'd say, out of the Kansai teams at the moment, I think they're best placed. Although with that Kobe squad, you could flick a switch and they could make a run for it up the league. So I wouldn't rule that out. But yeah, I've been relatively impressed with most of what I've seen from Cerezo Osaka. I think of the new signings, I really like Hikaru Nakahara. I don't think he's quite like Sakamoto levels or anything like that at the moment, but he's shown really good signs on occasion. When he's confident with when he gets the ball on that right hand side, he's keen to take on his man, he's keen to create chances. And I mean, he might just fall out of the team once Jean-Patrick comes in, which would be a shame. But yeah, I think he's been the brightest spark that's played more often, although Satoki Uejo, I really liked him whenever he's played. He's got goals in the Levain Cup and looked really sharp, and then off the bench, he's usually been the one that looks like he's going to score a score, and he looks like he's clinical in front of goal, and he's got that confidence in that from how he was playing last season. Hiroto Yamada, I think he's okay, but I would be playing Uejo ahead of him. Just I've seen a lot more of a lot of brighter things from Uejo, so hopefully once he gets more of maybe acclimatized to the team, then maybe he will see a bit more of him. But yeah, they've come in and they've done pretty well, I think, most of the new signings, although we maybe expected a bit more from Sayamai Kuma at right back, but I think he had a COVID issue towards the start of the season. He's not really got going after that, so hopefully that's one to work into. But yeah, generally, I've been pretty impressed with Cerezo, but they haven't really got the points that maybe their play would deserve.
I think just in that note about the new players, a couple of other players, I definitely second what you said about Nakahara and Uejo, but also at left back, Ryosuke Yamanaka. Mm. I think he's done better than I expected to. He looks like really good going forwards. And yeah, Maikuma is obviously one of my favourites, but I did notice when I watched the Gamba Cerezo Levan Cup game, and Riku Matsuda played the first 45 minutes essentially in a reserve Cerezo team, and just his level versus even the level of the backup players he was playing alongside, he was just head and shoulders above both the Cerezo and Gamba players. So it is going to be tough for Maikuma to get past Matsuda into the team. Whether they might be able to work him in another position, I don't know. The final player I wanted to mention, I don't know if it was someone Ben was going to ask about, is a young forward who maybe even pre-season Cerezo supporters themselves wouldn't have heard of, was the forward Sota Kitano, who I believe is still aged to go to high school, but they've turned his deal into a permanent one. And again, I caught him only really playing in the Levan Cup, and he played very well in the first half against Gamba in that game. He did not look like a 17-year-old high school boy. He's quite big and quite confident, and I think he missed a chance against Kyoto at the end of the game a couple of weeks ago. Hopefully that doesn't hit his confidence too hard, but obviously having someone like Kogiku in charge that knows the club inside out is going to bring that kind of player through, and he looks like an exciting one to watch for the future.
Yeah, it was during pre-season I was watching a few highlights of pre-season. I think they must have had an injury crisis or something, but they didn't have enough players really to fulfil that squad. So they brought in Kitano, this 17-year-old, and he was just the best player on the pitch. He was just so confident when he got on the ball. He was just, one-two-touch passing. He was just gliding past his opposition players, and I thought that they just looked at him at that and thought, okay, he's got to have a contract, he's got to be part of the squad this season. And yeah, I think he's been in the squad all but maybe, I think every game actually he's been in the squad, started three of the games in all competitions. And yeah, I mean, it was such a shame the miss he had against Shimizu, but generally for 17 he looks so confident, and yeah, he looks like a real one for the future, and definitely, yeah, well, yeah, great one to pick out, actually, Kitano, which yeah, maybe I should have done that. You've shown me up.
Bit of teamwork.
That's it. Yeah, we got there in the end, guys. So we covered them all. Yeah, it was a really eclectic mixture of ins and outs, wasn't it, over the off season. Now, obviously, we're focusing on the ins here, and yeah, a more experienced player like Yamanaka, who wasn't really given a proper chance, perhaps at Reds after he had looked so good in his time at Yokohama F Marinos, and he's come in coming off the bench in the first three league games. He's now started and looked really good in the last two league games, so hopefully he'll be making that left back spot his own. And Sam, I wager it'll be a matter of weeks, not months, before we see Satoki Wejo as a fixture in the Cerezo starting lineup, although there obviously is a lot of competition for places in the attacking areas. Wejo has looked really good in his cameos so far, but then, I mean, obviously Kitano just adds to the number of bodies Akio Kogiku has to pick from. But he did shrug off that miss, and he has looked good in all of his appearances so far as well, including a couple of league starts. So that's been really good to see Kitano thrust in there from the start. Talking about newcomers for Sapporo, it was obviously fairly slim pickings. And then, there's nothing really we can go on from the past game, because the two major ins over the course of the off-season are Gabriel Xavier and Shinzo Kuroki, and neither of them featured against Cerezo. So from what you've seen, Xavier started the first two league games, Sam, and Kuroki started every league game before this past Saturday, and of course has scored his first goal recently for Sapporo. So obviously Kuroki has settled in slightly better of the two then.
Yeah, Xavier hasn't been fit for the start of the season. He's been carrying a little knock, so he missed maybe a couple of games ago. He missed it completely. He was only on the bench for the previous game, and then obviously missed this one with the mass exodus of players. So yeah, he's just not really been able to get up to speed, I don't think. I'm sure he will come good. He just does fit that system really well, but yeah, he's just not quite there at the moment. And Kuroki, although he scored that one goal, I think, but generally I think he's been starved of service, which is strange in a Sapporo team that just do nothing but attack, but they get to a position towards the edge of the area and just haven't really found the ball. I don't think until this game Kanako has really played that well, and he came out of my fantasy football team obviously before he started to play well, so yeah, that was great. Another poor pick for my season, but yeah, beyond that, yeah, Kuroki, I mean, he's tried to work and tried to build up with players, but it's just not really clicked, I don't think, at the moment. But yeah, I mean, he's a quality player. I'm sure they will click it and get right. I mean, they've gone five games and five draws at the moment. It's just not quite there for Sapporo, but you just think at any given week, Sapporo will go and really click, and they will score a lot of goals and he'll be involved in them. But yeah, at the moment, slow starts for both of them.
All right, so we'll move on then to the next game, and we'll wrap up the four Kansai clubs by talking about Kyoto's home game against FC Tokyo. That ended at 1-0 to the visitors, and we mentioned confusion between who scored the second goal for Sapporo in the game against Cerezo, whether it was Nakashima or whether it was Kanako. Well, similarly here, the J-League has somehow decided to award the 68th minute goal, the winner in this game for FC Tokyo, to Diego Oliveira, which obviously usually I'd be well and truly in favour of. He's Tokyo's main striker and a player I'm a big fan of. The only unfortunate thing is that, Oliveira's strike was going well wide of goal before it hit the Kyoto defender Mendez and went in past the keeper. But I think, guys, the league's hands are tied because FC Tokyo went straight out and launched a range of merchandise commemorating Diogo Oliveira's 50th goal for the club or in J1. I'm sorry, I can't remember whether it was specifically for Tokyo, whether it was a league-wide thing. But, yeah, it's 50 up for Diogo. And I guess the league just couldn't take it away from him now, Johnny, even though, similarly to the Kaneko versus Nakashima goal, elsewhere, everywhere around the world, it's credited as a Mendes own goal. Only, according to the J-League themselves, is it actually Diego's goal.
Yeah, I think I wrote in my notes it would be an own goal in every other league. So, yeah, I know how he must feel. But, yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? There's been a lot of talk about, like, Pujibol. And this goal, ugly as it ended up, it started with just a punt out from the back, very route one. So, no matter what your philosophy is on football, there's always a time and a place to just boot the ball up down the field. And then, yeah, we're talking about new signings this year. But I think it was Kono down the right. He got probably the best touch in the move was his cutback for Oliveira. And he's not a new signing, but I think he had a bad knee injury last season. But he seems to have come in and fitted in quite well down the right. So, yeah, he's done a good job. But Oliveira probably quite embarrassed to be given that goal, but I'm sure he'll take it. And that the range of merchandise is very on brand for the J League, but yeah, it gives us something to talk about, doesn't it? I think I didn't see the whole game. I guess you probably saw more of it than me, Ben. But it seemed like Mendes was, again, as he tends to be, is involved at both ends and had a couple of chances in the first half, and then gets away with being credited with what should be an own goal, even though he didn't really know too much about it. I think the only other thing I really wrote down was Peter Utaka's hairstyle. I don't really have a whole lot else to say about it. I just thought it deserved some kind of mention. But yeah, I mean, I wanted to ask you, Ben, like about the new coach, because we're talking about players, but obviously some teams have new coaches. What I've really liked about him is, especially in social media, he's been very positive, encouraging, like youngsters, like players who've made their debuts in Levan Cup or league games. And I know last year we talked a bit about, like, I mean, FC Tokyo's not been quite a retirement home, but I think we talked about the aging of the squad. So it seems very much like he's advertising for future, like Matskis or players from the youth system. Like, if you come here and you're 17, 18, 19, 20, you will get a game. You're not just going to be on the bench because someone else has played 200 J1 games or has won the ACL decades before. I think that's been from an opposition supporter, that's been something I've seen. How about you as a Tokyo fan? What have you made of him in the start of the season?
Yeah, it has been really positive, Johnny. And yeah, I mean, throwing in Kuroyu Matsuki from the start of the first game of the season is we've got a lot of Tokyo supporters right behind the new manager because I did often pile on Kenta Hasegawa, and in some respects, looking back at it now, probably a little bit unfairly. But he's come in and it's literally is a breath of fresh air. And whether it's giving young players a start, giving Konno what appears to be a bit of a run in the team here, where in the past a player like him would have been seen as more of a flair player and somebody that was only worth bringing off the bench for the last 15, 20 minutes. A lot more faith has been placed into him. And I think just overall a refreshment that the club and the support needed after a number of years of treading water. And so far, again, I think along similar lines to last week's home win over Hiroshima. This wasn't a fantastic performance. We didn't, blow anyone's doors off or anything. But overall, although our hearts were in our mouths in the 95th minute when Kosuke Shirai volleyed over from 3 yards and we thought 3 points was turning into one with the last kick of the game. Overall, I think we were decent enough value for this win, and it carries on the positive vibes that Albert has instilled at the start of his reign. And long may it continue. So Sam, I mean, we've brought in a number of new players. That we, again, being FC Tokyo, and Matsuki's obviously got a lot of the headlines. Jakub Slovic and his kicking has been definitely a talking point throughout the preseason. And once again, you've yeah, your warnings were not heeded by me, and I went in all gung-ho, and it just appears that Slovic just can't kick the ball where he wants to, and that's something I'm just gonna have to get used to. He's obviously very good at saving shots, though, which we're thankful for. Kimoto was a player that I wasn't really sure on, but he has looked good so far after coming in from the Goya. He played his part in the goal by sending Condor free down the right-hand side. Henrique Trevisan from Oita has filled in when either Morishige or Kimoto has been out, and Keita Yamashita hasn't really featured yet. But I guess Matsky, Slovic, and Kimoto are the headliners, and they appear to have settled in very well at Ajinomoto Stadium.
Oh, yeah, I think they have all of them, really. I mean, Slovic, yeah, there were a few issues, but at least he's going to bail you out with a save anyway, so he makes up for whatever he may lack in the kicking department. And I think he has calmed down a little bit. I don't think he took quite as intricate passing as maybe was in that first game. I think he may have learnt his lesson slightly because, yeah, if you can't do it, just don't bother. don't try it. Leave it to other people. But, yeah, he's still a very good goalkeeper. He still has two or three very good saves each game. So, yeah, he hasn't lost that and looks a very good signing for you. I really like Kimoto. I like the kind of versatility to him as well. You can slot him into midfield if necessary. I think he played that game when Aoki was suspended, and I thought he played well in that position. Just really reliable, I think. And that's just, I mean, it's not necessarily something you often say about an FC Tokyo defence, reliability, but Henrique and Kimoto have both offered that, and I think that's a really good base to then go on and play more expressive football. I'm going to leave Matsky to you. I don't think I can do the justice that you will do when you shower praise on him. Obviously, he's been magnificent, and I think Kono, I think, deserves a mention. The old cliche is like a new signing, because he definitely has been, and just, yeah, really impressive. I'm glad he's been given the opportunity, as you say, maybe under other managers this wouldn't have been the case, but yeah, he really looks like a top player. And just get a season out of him with injury free, then yeah, you've got a really good player on your hands. But yeah, I'll go back to you to wax lyrical about Kuya Matsky.
Well, I don't know, I think the listeners might already be getting a little bit tired of it, Sam. I mean, yeah, well, he's been terrific. It's only four league games for Tokyo, but he's fitted in as if he's been in the team for 5 years, and he's gets himself about. He's just as happy mucking in and covering the defense as he is working himself into space and playing his part in attacking moves. So for an 18-year-old, it's something that we're not used to having at Tokyo. So I think we're going to have to enjoy him while he's with us. But the fact that he firstly chose Tokyo and that Albert has seen fit to put his faith in him has been it's just been terrific to see from the off. And he's actually off with the under-21s in that Dubai under-23 tournament over the international break. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on there. And it'll be, great experience for Matsky, I'm sure. Okay, so for Kyoto then, Johnny, it was, ultimately a frustrating afternoon. They had a golden chance, as I said, to nick a point right at the death. I think overall they were the better team for large stretches of this game, but they weren't really able to test FC Tokyo on a couple of occasions. Slovic was called into action, but otherwise it maybe was a frustrating afternoon for Kyoto and their supporters. Of their incomings this season, of course, we were confused about the goalkeeping situation. Then Naoto Kamifukumoto got himself sent off in match day three, and then Wakahara stepped in last week and kept his spot here for this game. It didn't do a massive amount wrong, so I wonder how that's going to work out in the weeks ahead. Mendes and Hisashi Appiah have come in at the back and been ever present. I think Appiah is the more surprising of those two. We weren't really sure if he was going to be a regular after coming in from Sendai. And elsewhere, I guess, in attack, we've seen Yuta Toyokawa come in and start a few games here and there, but not really able yeah, have a massive impact alongside Peter Utaka. So I guess the reinforcements have mainly come at the back for Kyoto, and a couple of them have been really eyebrow raising. I guess Appiah are the main one.
Yeah, I think they've kept the same formation, the 4-3-3 that they played last season, but the three in midfield and the three in attack have basically been made up of players that were there last year. So all the changes have come at the back, which for me is a bit surprising because, you know, the goalkeeper in the back four, the only one who left from that group was Jordi Boyce, who went to Okayama. So for me, still, the best back four in the defenders they have would be Ida, Asada, Inoue and Ogiwara. I'm not big on Mendes. I know it might be confirmation bias, but when I watched him play against Jubilo the other week, he gave the ball away to Jubilo twice in his own half in the first 2 minutes, and it didn't really improve from there. I think Appiah Tawiah is all right, but yeah, they've put Asada out to left back, and he was one of the best centre backs in J2 last year. And I think Inoue is a very good passer of the ball out from the back and a very good organiser. So I'm not really sure why Asada and Inoue are not the two main centre-backs. And then at right back, because in my favourite team in Scotland, Ayr, they're a bit of a yo-yo team. And people who might have seen me on Twitter kind of complaining about, you know, when teams like Sendai go down to J2 and then they bring in quality that would have helped them in J1. You also have the opposite of that when you've got someone like Kosuke Shirai, who's been a backup for two seasons, suddenly has become the main starter this year. And Ida seems to have played the Levan Cup games, and he started against Shonan. So I'm not really sure why he's made all these changes. I think, you know, when we talked about them in pre-season, I had them down there near the bottom. I think maybe 15th or 16th. I haven't seen anything to suggest that they're going to be much away from that, especially if Utaka stops scoring or gets injured, because as you say, Toyokawa has not done much, and then Yamasaki's hardly played, Martinez has dropped out, Omai's only played once. Yeah, but where are the goals coming from if Utaka doesn't provide them? What about you, Sam? What have you made of them in the first kind of five games of the season?
Yeah, well, first of all, Utaka is incredible. It's the way he's still going at 38. He's dragging this team, I think. I think they work really hard. I think they're pretty well organised. I think they've got that show mentality that they're going to make every game difficult for someone. So I think they will pick up enough points to be clear. I don't think it's going to be comfortable, like you said, but I think they'll just about do enough. I'm sure. I mean, Martinez, I don't think, has featured in any squad. I think he's been injured, Omai as well, and Ishmael, we haven't seen a great deal of either, so maybe just get a bit of them in there. There might be some goals to chip in, because at the moment, yeah, it is seemingly Utaka or bust in terms of goals. That defence has confused me as much as it has you. I probably had the same thought that you mentioned as what I would have had the preferred back line, and it's not really worked out that way. Although I think Mendes is decent enough in the opposition area and a bit of a liability in his own area. And I just want to bring in John Steele's tweet from the weekend and describe Mendes as a gangly lummox, which I thought was fantastic. I think it pretty much sums up Mendes as well. And yeah, alongside Appiah, I don't think it's the most reliable centre-back pairing you're ever going to get. They're okay, but there's always an error in both of them, I think. So I think that might come to haunt them later on in the season. But generally, they've acquitted themselves pretty well into J1. I thought they were pretty good against Tokyo. They definitely caused a few issues. Maybe not, didn't do enough to necessarily get anything out of the game, but yeah, they caused quite a few problems, and they have done to Reds and Cerezo this season. So I think that fighting grit will get them through most of this season. But yeah, just maybe needs a bit of quality up front. And hopefully for them, that comes when Martinez gets back or when Omai gets back. But yeah, if they don't, then it's all on Utaka. I mean, yeah, he's doing it at the moment. But yeah, can he do it for an entire season? I'm not too sure.
Just one player, just quickly, that we didn't mention is actually Daiki Kaneko, who obviously he couldn't play against Urawa in the first game. And I think he came in for one, I think it was the Jubilo game, and they moved Kawasaki forward and Kaneko played the first half, I think. And it just did not work with him in front of Appiah Tawiah and Mendes. Granted, he'd kind of been thrown in the deep end. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes further forward, because he should be able to help out. But again, a bit like we're saying with the Kobe midfield, can you fit Kawasaki and Kaneko into that same midfield?
Yeah, I think that's the issue. I think they're pretty much the same player, and Kawasaki has just been in form for for longer, and I think he's well worth his place in that midfield. He's been, outside of Utaka, probably the most impressive player at Kyoto, and I have a lot of love for Daiki Kaneko and the way he played at Shonan, but at the moment, I can't see it working at the moment, fitting those two in. Maybe there is a way, maybe Cho does figure that out, but at the moment I think it's Kawasaki's position, and Kaneko has a bit of work to do to try and force his way into that midfield.
Okay, so they are the results of all of four Kansai clubs rounded up from the weekend. Next, we're going to head to Saitama Stadium and the weekend's biggest winners. They were Urawa Red Diamonds, who got their second league victory of the season, 4-1 over their visitors, Jubilo Iwata. It was a very fast start for Reds. One of their off-season signings, Tomoya Inukai, came in for his first league start and scored in the 8th minute, getting a glancing header on Ken Iwa's corner, and the ball flashing into the net past Ryuki Miura, who was very busy in this game, and did himself no harm at all, his reputation no harm, but still was on the receiving end of 4 goals. Kasper Juncker, who could have had a hat-trick inside the first 25 minutes were it not for a couple of excellent saves from Miura, did get a goal himself in the 11th minute. Great to see him back in the starting 11 and notching for his troubles, although as I said, it could have been a lot better if it wasn't for the intervention of Miura. Then can you believe it, J1 top scorer Yuto Suzuki headed in from a Yasuhito Endo free kick in the 14th minute to make it 2-1 to Reds. Suzuki, that's his fourth of the season. So, he's putting Yuki Kakita to shame and, already has 4 times as many goals as Kakita does so far this year. Alexander Schultz made it to 3-1 to Reds from the penalty spot 8 minutes before half time. Perhaps for many an unlikely penalty taker, the central defender, but he dispatched the spot kick with some aplomb. And then we finally got our first glimpse of David Moberg / David Moberg Carlson. And it took him all of 3 minutes in his J1 debut to notch his first goal when he drove forward from about 35 yards out and finished in off Miura's fingertips. It could have been even better for Carlson. He probably should have had another goal just past the hour, but Miura made an excellent save to deny him a brace on debut. So before we chat about all of the incomings for these two teams, Sam, this was Reds back to form and taking their chances, and a very comfortable ultimately afternoon for the Saitama Stadium side.
Yeah, night and day compared to their performance against Tosu last week, where there was literally no energy in that game. They came out fast, they came out firing, they just pressed Jubilo, they played the ball quickly. I thought they looked a lot better with Juncker up front. His movement, I think, up front is better than Osaka's, and I think Osaka is better in the withdrawn role, so I think it worked really well. They caused Jubilo so many problems, just dragged them all over the place, and Jubilo are a slow team, so if you play with pace against them, you're going to break them down, and that was how it was. They just blew them away. Yeah, for most of that first half, there was that glimmer of hope when Suzuki pulled one back. But generally, Reds just were in complete control of this game. It's what we want to see from an Aurora Red side, not the slow, pedestrian, whatever it was last week. This was much better. So, very good for them. They've got players back, coming back. Just add Matt Slow into this, and then you're almost to the full strength. They finally dropped to Iwanami, I think. Ryan Steele can now sleep a little easier after Iwanami has been dropped. And Moberg, off the bench, looked very good. He took his goal superbly, just made a little bit of space on the edge of the area. It was a really good finish, like the perfect way to start your Reds career. And generally, he looked a real threat. So, a lot more positive signs for Reds in this game. And it's kind of the response that Kobe were probably after, whether to kickstart their season. Reds have got that, and hopefully for them, they can move on now and put a bit of a shaky start behind them.
Well, that's it, isn't it, Johnny? I mean, we were obviously our opinion on Reds is changing on a week-to-week basis because their performances are so up and down. So after, as Sam said, after last week where they just didn't turn up at all away to Tosu and were deservedly beaten, then they've gotten off to a fast start here. And with two players making their first starts of the season, Inukai and Junker, getting them going in the inside the first 10 or 11 minutes, and then all of a sudden they're away and they look really good value for their 3 points here. So I guess it goes back to what we were saying towards the end of last season, that they're still a work in progress, aren't they? And all of the players that they brought in over the past year and a bit, they're obviously settling in at different rates and different comfort levels, and it might be midway through this season before we can properly make a learned opinion on how good this Red side really is.
Yeah, I think I had both of these teams in my J-Preds, obviously at different ends of the league. And I think when I was making my J-Pred, the Reds team I had in mind had Junker up front, had Moberg Carlson on the right, Matsuo on the left, and Esaka in behind with the likes of Koizumi and Sekine Akimoto to come in as backup. Whereas essentially the first few games of the season, they've been playing three games a week with the reserves there. So obviously I think Sakai and Ohata, I think, both got injured in this game, which is a bit of concern at fullback. But yeah, I think the nature of this result is probably more pleasing than what really should have been a win anyway. The fact that I think Junker only played the first half, but like Sam said, he was so sharp, and just the way he stretches the defence, it just gives him a completely different option. And Moberg Carlson couldn't have done any more than come on and score within like 3 minutes of his debut and cause all sorts of problems. So there's definitely lots for Reds fans to be excited about. If it was to use a bit of a cliche, I think Yuki Miura and the Iwata goal stopped it from being a cricket score. It could have been 7 or 8 if he wasn't in such good form. And I think Jubilo, I think I was talking about them after the Gamba game. I think Jubilo are in a bit of trouble. They've got 5 points, which looks okay, but then I think they've kind of nicked points against Fukuoka and Gamba when they were second best for large spells of those games. And I think they were slightly better than Kyoto prior to the red card, but that 4-1 does look a bit harsh given the unfortunate nature of the sending off. As you said, like Sam mentioned again, that they're not a quick team, and they still get Kentaro Oi in there centre back. They're just run ragged by Reds. And I'm definitely having second thoughts at my J-Pred top four, but my bottom three of Kyoto, Shonan and Jubilo, I've not seen anything so far to say that's particularly wrong.
Yeah, fair enough then. All right, so quickly on the some of the new arrivals at Reds. I mean, as we said, Sam, still a work in progress, but I mean, you could see how Ken Iwao is already so important to the way Reds play. He's when he's not getting sent off, yes, he's been ever present in the centre of midfield, and obviously rekindling his relationship with Ricardo Rodriguez from their time together at Tokushima. And I guess the other new ins, they've all had opportunities here and there, with the exception of Matsuo, who was the last one that really needs to get up to speed and to get himself into the squad. So hopefully, if not straight after the international break, then within a month or so of that, then we might see him featuring regularly for Reds. But I guess what has Iwao in particular added to Urawa that perhaps they were missing in Rodriguez's first season in charge?
He's kind of the one that he knows exactly what Rodriguez wants. He's that kind of go-to guy, the leader on the pitch, not necessarily the captain, but plays that role. He controls that midfield. He just, like, sets the tempo. He kind of gets everyone organised, and you know what to do when Iwao is there. He keeps everything settled. He keeps things ticking over. I think there one concern maybe is if Reds aren't quite on it, I think he gets overrun a little quickly, and that's where, like, he's a good player, but is he a top-level player? I'm not sure about that. I think he's ideal for Rodriguez's system, but maybe a better version of Iwao would be the best for Reds if they're going to win leagues or whatnot. But, yeah, he's settled in pretty well, generally. And just, they kind of needed that kind of guidance in midfield, because Ito and Shibata are good young players. There's a lot of potential, especially with Ito, but just need that little bit of kind of walking through it a little bit, which Iwao provides. And then on the ball, he's very competent. He's very yeah, he doesn't really give the ball away too often. So, yeah, he's been that settling presence in there. I think he might only be at Reds for maybe a 1 to 2 season job just to kind of bridge a gap for Rodriguez. But, yeah, he's a perfect kind of linchpin at the moment.
I actually wanted to ask you, Sam, about Iwao. I'd written down a kind of question about, do you think, because you mentioned about 1 or 2 seasons, do you think he might actually drop out of the team as the season progresses and they have less games? Because obviously the full Reds game I watched was against Gamba, where like you said, he did get caught out. He actually gave away 3 very similar fouls and eventually got a red card. Because, I mean, after all, he is someone who's well into his 30s and he's basically been a J2 player for most of his career. So I agree with you that, you know, if Reds are looking to challenge not only for the J1 title, but also to win the ACL, he's maybe someone you don't really want playing 20, 25, 30 games. Do you think they will look to phase him out as the season goes on?
Potentially. It could be a similar situation as they had with UK Abbey at the start of last season, where I think he went on a run of starting maybe the first 10 games or the majority of the first 10 and then was phased out once they kind of got acclimatised to it. So maybe that is the way they go. I don't see him necessarily... I think he's got a little bit more longevity in him this season than Abe did. I think he will probably play the majority of games this season, but then I do expect him to be phased out either towards the end of this year or into next season. I think, yeah, I can't see him being the regular starter next year. But, yeah, I think at the moment... Yeah, they kind of are relying on him at the moment to set that tone in midfield. But yeah, once I think eventually you've got Hirano, Ito and Shibato, they should be able to do a good job between themselves once they've maybe learnt the system a bit more, they're a bit more confident. So yeah, eventually it will be phased out, but maybe not quite as quickly as Abe was last year.
Sounded like Pickle might have had a contrasting opinion there, Sam. But yeah, we'll wait and see.
Big Kenny Wow fan. Sorry about that.
Yes. No, we'll wait and see how Rodriguez handles the Iwao situation, and yeah, whether you or Pickle is proved to be right at the end of the day, we shall see. But yes, a good afternoon out for the Saitama Stadium faithful, most definitely, and a 4-1 win for Reds over Iwata to lift them up to 6th in the table. All right, well, yeah. You blink and all of a sudden Kawasaki are 4 points clear. Yes, the same Kawasaki team who were defeated quite soundly by Urawa in the Super Cup, who were, I don't want to say second best, but yeah, came out on top in a game that they might not necessarily have deserved to win against FC Tokyo in the opening day. Then promptly got thumped. Yes, Pickle, we all remember. 4-2 by Yokohama F. Marinos in midweek in between match days 1 and 2. And all of a sudden, Johnny, now they're 4 points clear. Of course, a number of teams below them have 2 games in hand. And indeed, FC Tokyo and Nagoya have 3. But how do they do it? Another win. This time away from home over a Hiroshima side who have looked good in recent weeks and, again, can look back on this game with some frustration after a Yuki Nogami own goal finally saw their defence breached in the 73rd minute, and then Miki Yamane sealed the victory for the defending champions with just 2 minutes to go. So, Frontale, they do it again. And, Hiroshima now second from bottom, although their performances in recent weeks certainly, suggest that better times might be ahead for them.
If I can maybe depress the fans of non-Frontale fans even more, let me add that, you know, the last couple of seasons, Frontale winning league with the points totals they have, that's not really been normal. I was kind of looking through the previous league tables and generally about 2.1 points per game will win you the title. Sometimes it's even been less than 2 points per game. Frontale are already going at 2.2. And I don't know how much value this has, but, you know, I always like to do a full 18-team J-Pred for my own personal use. And their first 6 games were all against teams I had in my top 9. And they were still able to grind out those kind of results. Not playing beautiful football, but just getting it done. My kind of theory is, like, you know, there's other teams, like you mentioned, Marinos and Urawa, have both beaten Frontale this season. And both of those teams probably at their best, that they're able to reach a level higher than Frontale. But Frontale just have no obvious flaw. Like, you know, the Marino's performance against Kashiwa, they were just giving the ball away constantly, their own defensive thirds. Urawa, when they played Gamba, had like 10 shots in the first 30 minutes, didn't score. You don't give 10 shots to Kawasaki in a whole game and expect to live to tell the tale. And likewise, Frontale just won't give you, they won't give you the ball like so many times in the edge of their own area. Even, you know, as much as it hurt me, that 95th minute equaliser against Gamba, would another team in J1 think to do that, or would they just let Gamba smack the ball in the corner and waste time? It's been nowhere near as pretty as previous seasons, but yeah, they're still the favourites to win the league for me. And then down the other end, you've got Hiroshima, and yeah, I think I was on when we kind of previewed them and we pointed out the lack of a finisher. I think Ayukawa scored a very nice goal against Tokyo last week, but I believe he's out with a foot injury. He's pulled out of the under-23 squad. I just wonder if they're getting a lot of plaudits for the way they're playing and they're kind of gegenpressing. But I wonder how many times, like myself or you guys or whoever's on the pod, like future guests, are kind of left lamenting the lack of a finisher at Hiroshima. What do you think about that, Sam?
Oh, it's going to 100% be a problem. I think that all their hopes are resting on Ayukawa, who has shown in flashes that he can be a very good finisher. He's only 20, but I mean, he got injured at the end of last season. He's already had one injury prior to this current one this season. And that's been an issue that they've had with all their strikers. I think Douglas Vieira has hardly ever got a run together. Junior Santos is probably the fittest of all of them, but just whatever reason, the Junior Santos at Marinos has not appeared in Hiroshima. So I don't know where he is. And Rio Nagai is permanently injured as well. So absolutely, it's a massive issue for them. They can press as much as they like, and still, at the end of the day, you've got to finish teams off, you've got to score goals, and that is going to be a major issue for them. I do like the way that they are playing, and I do think they deserve the plaudits for that. I think it gives them the best chance that they have of winning games, but yeah, I don't see them scoring many goals a game, and they're always going to be fighting for it, and they're always going to be difficult games for them. So yeah, it's a difficult one completely for them. I thought until Frontale scored, I think Hiroshima were the better team in this game, but Frontale, they just managed to get the job done. I don't really know how they do it with their defensive issues. Their midfield in this game was not great. Oshima was on the bench, he's just come back from another injury. Xiao Schmidt and Tatsu Kiseko were in some naughty corner somewhere and not allowed to play. And Chanatip, who turned into this season this midfielder Greshler, he's already got himself a yellow card suspension, which is not the Chanatip I remember. So, yeah, they were playing with Kazuki Kozuka, who a couple of seasons ago couldn't get into the Oita team, and that was a dreadful Oita team, and he's found himself starting, and still Frontale are able to win games. They've looked very average pretty much all season, but are top and are quite clear, and it's 2.2 points per game. That has to be worrying for teams when they just look at this kind of, how are they managing to do that? And you know they've got several gears to find. So yeah, another ominous looking season at the moment, but I mean, there is hope that this team do look beatable, but at the moment, they don't really seem to be too often.
Well, that's it. Yeah, we had a couple of questions come in from Grum Freche this week. And one of them on Frontale, he says they're far, far away from being the juggernaut they used to be, but they get the job done. Are they on their way to getting on a roll, or are they more profiting from the other team's results? So I guess, Johnny, you mentioned, the F Marinos have, thrown away points in the case of their game against Kashiwa a couple of weeks ago. And then, this past weekend, couldn't win a water polo game against Tosu. So, that's another 2 points that they've had to do without. So I guess, maybe things like these sort of even themselves out over the course of the season. But Frontale aren't going to be, throwing away points in the manner that F Marinos did against Reysol, for example, are they? So they're just steady enough, and yes, they wait for opponents to make mistakes, and they're always ready to pounce, aren't they?
Yeah, I think, like I mentioned, the last two seasons, that there's been, like, even last season, Marinos' points total was particularly impressive for second place. I think this year, there's the top to bottom, the gap's probably going to be smaller. There's no team's going to win the league with only losing like one or two games. I think the points total required to win the title will be a bit lower. And just kind of, looking, obviously the top two have played seven games, but then you've got Kashima, if they win their two games in hand, they would go ahead of Kawasaki, and Kashiwa also would go level in points. FC Tokyo, again, they've all got two or three games in hand, so a lot could go wrong. But it's not like Kawasaki have sailed into the distance versus the other ACL teams, who've all had various stages of rebuilding or massive issues. But it'll be very interesting to see. We're going to talk about Kashima and Kashiwa as well later, when we talk about it more then. But yeah, I think Frontale, I've seen nothing to say that they're not the favourites. They're not still the favourites. But yeah, there might be a few challengers to emerge, and they've got to go away to the ACL. You never know what's going to happen. But yeah, it's still ominous for the rest of the league that they're sort of scraping by, and they've got all these players and all these gears to go into.
Yeah, most definitely. So, Sam, you mentioned the ins already for Kawasaki. So we don't really need to talk about them. I don't know whether the listeners are already tired about hearing about Chanatip in the same way they are about Kuro Yamatsuki after the first month or so of the season. So Hiroshima, yeah, we mentioned since the start of the season the lack of a reliable goal scorer. Elsewhere, though, in terms of their ins, I mean, Makoto Mitsuta has been impressive, hasn't he? He's started the last couple of games after coming on as a sub in his first appearance in match day three, the young player out of Ryutsu Keizai University. And he almost had a first J-League goal in the 15th minute when his volley from just inside the six-yard box squirmed through the legs of Junsung Ryong, but had to be cleared off the line by Shogo Taniguchi. So, I mean, Mitsuta has been a player that Michael Skipper has shown some faith in already, and has looked to that he's capable of repaying that, and looks like he could become an important player for Hiroshima down the line.
Yeah, it does look that way, and obviously Skipper has come in straight away and thought, yeah, he's a guy for me, and taken Yoshifumi Kashiwa out of the team, and yeah, Mitsuta has settled in very well. I think he's got very good energy. He has to in that wing-back role that Hiroshima play. He's going to have to be up and down, but he's able to do that. He's comfortable with both feet. He can go inside and out, which I think he tried a few crosses early, cutting back in, but he was also going past the fullback, getting balls into the area. And then crucially, as he did for the chance here, he gets himself into nice positions when the ball's on the other side of the pitch. So he's there to make use of the space that he might have to get onto the end of crosses. So, yeah, really he's taken up the mantle very well, and looks a pretty good player. And obviously he's seen quite a bit of it in him, Michael Skipper, and has given him that chance. And, yeah, he was kind of unheralded, I'd say, at the start of the season, just and one of these university students that you don't really know a great deal about until they start playing. And it turns out, yeah, he's a really good footballer. So they need, if only they could have found a few more of those and maybe in a striking position, then it might be good for Hiroshima, because, yeah, they've been so limited, haven't they, with the resources they've got to bring in players. That team really hasn't been shaken up a great deal in the last 2 or 3 years. And it's a team that has just kind of grown quite stagnant. I mean, there are reasonable players in there, but at the moment, yeah, they do need a freshen up. Maybe the tactic will freshen them up, and maybe they can bring in a few more youngsters, but like Mitsuda, who has done really well. So it's hopefully other young players in that squad can see what he's done in the last two games and, yeah, take that on and really think they can get into this side, and Michael Skipper will give them a chance.
I think also that you mentioned Mitsuta, there's also Taishi Semba came in from Ryutsu Keizai as well. And I noticed he started the first game against Tosu in one of those kind of shadow forward positions, but he'd been out of the squad. I don't know if he had an injury, but then he was back on as a sub against Kawasaki. So, yeah, he might be able to help in attack. But I know when I've been on with John on J-Talk Extra Time, that talking about in J2, just getting a quality forward, that's where the money really, like if you're a club that doesn't have a lot of money, like Hiroshima don't appear to, you have to pay the big bucks to get those kind of players, and they just don't have it at the moment.
Yes, indeed. All right. So, well, I mean, I think they've acquitted themselves really well in their past couple of games, Hiroshima, against the Tokyo and Kawasaki, but unfortunately have had nothing to show for it, apart from, obviously, Shun Ayakawa's excellent goal against Tokyo that Johnny referenced. But, a difficult defeat to take here. And as we said, it leaves them second from bottom after five rounds. But, I think performances have indicated that if they can get a reliable reliable avenue to goal, then things will be looking up for them in the weeks and months ahead. Let's certainly hope so for all the Hiroshima supporters' sake. All right, so we'll move on. And we referenced the water polo game that broke out at Mitsuzawa last Friday night. Sam referenced it right back at the start of the episode. So, yeah, Yokohama F. Marinos hosted Tosu in a game that promised so much. But, yeah, after kicking off in steady rain the conditions only seemed to worsen throughout the 90 minutes. And, the ball was sticking on the pitch. It's one of those that you see once or twice a season in the J-League and you wonder why the game isn't postponed, as it almost certainly would be anywhere else in the world. But, no, we have to get these games played. It wasn't much of a spectacle, there were obviously were incidents and, shots and, Park Il-gyu, as he's wont to do, flying out of his area and lucky not to get sent off on a couple of occasions, perhaps. But, ultimately it ended 0-0 and in frustration. And if you listen to the mini cast that Stuart Woodward did on the Tricolor Pride feed, you could hear Stuart's frustrations there that a game that he had to sit through in pretty ordinary conditions and then watch again, as he described it, a water polo game was frustrating for everyone concerned, and especially for F. Marinos, who wanted to keep pace with Frontale, and their conditions were not conducive to them doing so. So, let's just move on and talk about the ins for both of these clubs, gents. We've obviously been recording for, an hour and a half at least. And, a number of players have come in and featured prominently for both of these teams. So I don't think I can ask you to be brief because, we want to give each and every club their due. So, Sam, I guess when it comes to F. Marinos, they've had to utilize their squad almost as much as anybody so far this season, whether it's due to COVID situations or, just injuries and players returning to fitness, et cetera. They've had to shift a lot of players in and out on a weekly basis, and it's meant that a lot of their newcomers have gotten opportunities perhaps earlier than we might have expected.
Yeah, it's one where the whole squad has been used. I think Ndao Tala came on at the week on Friday, and I think that leaves only Koi Kada as the outfield player that hasn't got any minutes so far this season, their entire squad, which shows just how much they've been stretched this season. I think generally those players that have come in have acquitted themselves well. I was so impressed with Riku Yamane and Joel Fujita, especially in that Kobe game, that midweek round. But then Fujita has gone on and played another couple of games after that. He just looks so used to this level of football. He just looks, a kind of Rolls Royce of a midfielder. I think, he's got a long-term future, perhaps for the Japan national team, hopefully, and definitely in this F. Marinos team. So he's probably been the player that has impressed me the most. Eduardo has not quite played as well as I'd have hoped. And ignore his shortcomings for now. I'm sure he'll get better and he'll start playing well in that Marinos team. But Fujita has been very good. I've liked Nishimura as well. He's not played too many games. He's had two starts, but has looked really threatening in those two games, actually playing in the central role and like out wide or on the bench for Vigalta Sendai last season. I mean, maybe he could have helped them stay up, you never know. But he's played well. He scored a couple of goals for F. Marinos, looked dangerous. And Anderson Lopez, I don't know what to say about Anderson Lopez. I think his hold up and his build up play has actually been very impressive, and I think that he's kind of gelled really nicely with Elbert and Nakagawa, if that is the main partnership. He's not really played together too often, but I think it has worked really well. He's got his customary few fortunate goals, one deflected, one sat on his lap on 2 yards out from goal, so he's got that, but that's kind of dried up a little bit for him, which is a real shame to see. But I think his overall play has been better than I imagined. And it's looking like a useful addition. I won't go any further than that for F. Marinos. But generally speaking, everyone that's come in has played well. I think defensively is going to be their biggest issue. If Eduardo can't fill that breach from Thiago Martins and Hatanaka is injuries, I think he's missed the last month. And though Sanato is fantastic at overhead kicks, I think he's quite a fan favourite with F. Marinos supporters. I have issues with him defensively. I think he can be got at quite quickly, and playing alongside Sonoda, who was looked quite good actually when he has played, but he's still only 22. He's very inexperienced. So that is their biggest concern at the moment. Maybe Eduardo will figure it out and come good, but yeah, just I still think there's a major gap there that then gonna, it's so difficult to replace Thiago Martins, and I don't think they've done that. But otherwise, I think the squad members that have come in have played pretty well.
Yeah, agreed there, agreed there. And I wonder whether Sonoda and Eduardo might be the the long-term solution for Kevin Muscat at centre-back. But, yeah, we'll wait and see on that. So, Johnny, any thoughts on the F. Marino's arrivals? Or if not, we can segue on to, all of them, not necessarily all of them from Tosu, but I guess the ones that have stood out in the first month or so of the season, thinking of the likes of Yuki Horigome and, Taisei Miyashiro has gotten his opportunities in the past couple of games. Yuto Iwasaki as well has looked really impressive. And, they've changed pretty much an entire squad's worth of players, haven't they? And a lot of them have featured early doors.
Yeah, for Marinos, I'll just copy and paste what Sam said, because I'd written Fujita and Yamane as the ones I wanted to talk about, and Eduardo for being kind of so-so. So I'll just go straight on to Tosu. And yeah, they were the one that, when you said we're going to be doing this, they were the one that immediately leapt out to me. Is like you say, they've changed almost their entire squad. And the team they remind me a bit of is like Leicester City before they won the Premier League. Because I remember after, I think when Leicester had won the league, I think it was someone at Manchester United was asked about, like, well, why didn't you sign like Riyad Mahrez? And basically said, well, the same people who were saying we should have signed Mahrez 2 years ago are the same people who would have like criticised us for signing someone from the French second division 2 years ago. So Tosu have brought in players that I think like the likes of Gamba or Reds or Kashima, etc., couldn't really get away with signing. Like Horigome, I mean, his career trajectory said he'd be going to the bottom end of J2. Like, he wasn't getting a game at Yamagata. And obviously, the coach wasn't picking the team, Tosu's coach, but he knew of him. And I thought him and both him and Akito Fukuta, the way they'd played or not really played the last kind of season and a half, I thought they were just coming to Tosu to make up the numbers and play Levan Cup games. But yeah, they've both played and played pretty well. Like, Horigome hit the bar with a good free kick here. And Fukuta is playing a position that's it's difficult to stand out in. And I honestly thought, like, Naoyuki Fujita had come in from Cerezo, I thought he'd play there. But Fukuta's come in there and he's shielded the defence well. He's done pretty well. And I also wanted to talk about three of the players they brought in from universities. Because, you know, as Sam said with Mitsuta, it's difficult to know with these guys. What I do know about with Tosu is that all of these signings were made well before the end of the season. I think they were all made even before the summer, before Matsuoka and Hayashi left, which usually gives you some kind of indication they're quite confident in the players coming in. The one I had highest hopes for is actually Shunta Araki, who I don't think started in the league. He's been on the bench, I think, most of games, but he scored in the Levan Cup. I think he came from Komazawa University, and I think he got two assists in the final of the University Cup. And Taichi Kikuchi, he's been in the attacking three in every game this season. I didn't really expect much from him. And I wasn't, a bit like Mitsuta, the Meikan lists him in about four or five different positions. So I wasn't sure what his best one was. And then the final one, I think you mentioned after his goal a few weeks ago, was the forward Yuta Fujihara. And obviously there's been Kakita and Miyashiro injuries, and Ono's injured. Nishikawa's been nowhere to be seen. I don't know if that's an injury or what, but yeah, all these guys have come in and yeah, they've added something. They've plucked these players from J3, from the benches of J2, from university teams, and it's all working so far. I mean, the one I wanted to ask you about, Sam, was because he's played the most, is Taichi Kikuchi. What have you made of him? What's he brought to the team?
Yeah, very good on the ball, actually. Very calm. Plays out on that right wing, as you say. I didn't know what position he was going to fill when he came in. But, yeah, very tidy player. He's got a very nice partnership at the moment with Eno. They kind of interchange a little bit in that position. One will go wide, the other will cut in. I think his movement in field is very nice. I mean, he's playing maybe borrow time with his position, I'd say. Once Kakita is fit, I imagine Miyashiro might flip out to that right-hand side, but he's definitely given a very good account of himself. He gets into really nice positions. He's tidy. Yeah, his link-up play has been very good. So, yeah, very impressed with him. And all of those university players, actually, I think we will see a bit more of Shunter Araki. He had a bit of an injury to start the season. But, yeah, he's coming towards fitness now. He's got a few cameo appearances off the bench and looked pretty decent when he has played. So, yeah, those three, they've obviously done good due diligence on them. They knew that they were going to be in financial disarray and have had to come up with a plan, and they seem to have done that really well. I mean, Yuki Horigome, I think, is the surprise of the season. I mean, yeah, as you say, didn't play much at all for Yamagata last season. Previously, I think he was struggling to get in the Jeff team, and I mean, how did he manage that? And he's come in here and he's just been one of the better players in the league. The way that he, again, on that side, the way that they play is so fluid. With Horigome and Iwasaki switching around and going to different places, his crossing has been magnificent. I just, yeah, he's been an absolute shock for me. I just did not expect anything from Yuki Horigome and generally Tosu, I suppose. So they've been pleasant surprises all the way through. Even the likes of Diego at the back at centre back, because looking at that, you'd probably have said Huang Shoko, Shimakawa would have started, and Nakano from last season. And like, there have been injuries to those first two. Nakano hasn't really been there, and Diego has come in. He was left back for Tokushima last season and looked like pretty average, I'd have said, but he's slotted into this system on the left side of centre back. He looks very solid, and yeah, he just looks like they just look like they know what they're doing, and it doesn't look like a hodgepodge of players that has been chucked together. It looks like they know exactly what they're doing. I credit has to go to the manager for managing to get this squad working in the way that they have been. But yeah, everyone I think is playing one or two levels above where they probably should be given the perceived talent of the players. But it's, yeah, it's working very well for Tosu, and long may that continue.
Yeah, a very surprising start to the season. And yeah, if you had Tosu as one of the that would be one of the final two unbeaten teams after match day five, along with Sapporo, then, well, yes, if you had that, then I'd like Thursday night's Lotto 6 numbers as well, please. Yes, Tosu, 7 points from 5 games played. Just the 3 goals scored, but only 2 conceded, and yeah, that is a pretty good going. And yeah, they've made the most of a very well, a tricky situation, and they brought in some players that have surprised us all through the first month or so of the season. All right, next up we'll move to the Kashima Soccer Stadium, where Kashima hosted Shonan on Saturday afternoon. The visitors took a 16th minute lead through Yusuke Sagawa, whose goal was finally confirmed to have crossed the line after a VAR check. It was hooked off the line, but yes, VAR coming to the conclusion that the ball had crossed the line, and well, hopefully the referee would have eventually awarded a penalty for Kwon Sun-tae taking Sagawa out when he clipped the ball over the top of him. But the fact that he didn't in real time suggests that maybe he would not have. So thankfully, yes, VAR came to Belmare's aid and awarded the goal for Sagawa. 4 minutes into the second half, for ISA Wada equalized for the hosts with an excellent strike from 20 or so yards out. And then just past the hour, Juan Alano made it 2-1, and that's how it finished for Antlers, a victory that takes them up to third in the table. These two sides obviously at different ends of the spectrum after 5 match days. Antlers third and Shonan bottom and winless. For Antlers, I guess their 3 major ins in the off season, Johnny, were Yuma Suzuki, of course, returning from Belgium, Yuta Higuchi coming over from Tosu, and Kim Min-tae officially from Sapporo, of course, but he had been playing for Nagoya previously. So, how have those three settled in, and how have they affected the way that Antlers go about things?
Well, I'll start with Suzuki, and I'd like to focus more on his on-field play. I've been kind of vocal about his off-field or off-the-ball stuff in the past, but let's be a bit more positive about him, because as he showed with his assist in this game, if he's focused and he's focusing on his football, he is a massive player for them, and he causes opposing defences at J1 level all sorts of problems. I think even kind of going back to that opening game against Gamba, he was big, he was physical, he was strong. If you take out what he did, which was obviously wrong, he really bullied the Gamba defence, and he caused them no end of problems, which he can do to teams at all levels of this league. And I think with, you mentioned Ueda scoring this goal and now in the national team, you have questions, is Ueda going to stay at Kashima all this season, or would he go somewhere in the summer? Everaldo's been out of form. Suzuki is back, and as long as he can keep himself relatively in the straight and narrow and avoid any suspensions or falling out with anyone, I think he's going to be a massive player for them, and they are shaping up to be potentially Kawasaki's nearest challengers. I did think there would be that last season. It didn't work out that way, but the way they've started this season, minus, of course, the loss to Frontale, I think they could be a good shout without being in the ACL. Higuchi as well, I've only really got good things to say about him. Like, I watched the first game of the season, and you'd have thought he'd been playing for Antlers for years. I thought Pituka came on very well once. It was 11 against 10 against Gamba, but Higuchi just started from the word go, and he was an excellent player. And it's very interesting to see that the game against Shonan, an extremely, extremely attack-minded midfield diamond for Antlers with Higuchi and Izumi and then Doi and Araki. There's not many defensive players, not many N'Golo Kantes in there. So Higuchi is a versatile player, can play holding midfielder, attacking midfielder on either side. I think he's going to be a massive player for them, not only this season, but going forwards. Kim Min-tae, I've been very positive about Suzuki and Higuchi. Yeah, the Antlers' problems at the back, isn't it? They've got Kento Mizawa playing in there. Sekigawa's good, but he's very raw. Kim Min-tae, he's done all right, but I think he didn't play this week. I've lost track of all the COVID cases.
Yeah, no, he didn't, Johnny, no.
Yeah, so he's just been okay, but he's probably playing in a team where, like Sapporo, it's going to be very difficult for him to stand out in a positive way. A defensive-minded team like Fikadenti's Nagoya, then, obviously he can show his true worth, but how well he's going to look in a extremely attack-minded Antlers side remains to be seen. But yeah, I mean, Sam, what have you made of those three players? I guess specifically Suzuki, what do you think lies in store for him?
I love Suzuki. I think he's fantastic. I know he's got his issues, but he might not be everyone's cup of tea. But yeah, the way he works across that line, he's so difficult to pick up because you'll find him left, you'll find him right, you'll find him in the middle. He's so good in the air. I just think he's got absolutely everything to him. I think it's a travesty that Osaka has missed out on this national team, and they've called up Daichi Hayashi first of all, and Suzuki should have been there. And then when Maeda has pulled out, to not call up anyone, so you're saying nobody is better than having Suzuki in the team, I think it's ridiculous. So I'll start my call for Yuma Suzuki in the Japan national team, and hopefully he eventually gets in there because he just offers something a little bit different, and just the way that they attack, I think he's so good, because him pulling out, it just gives Araki or Doi the chance to come in from either of the wing to operate where they're more dangerous, and it's so fluid, it's so difficult to defend against. And I echo everything you say about Yuta Higuchi. He's a terrific player, and Kim Min-tae is going to find it difficult in this team because they're going to leave him exposed, and just back to his Sapporo days when he tried to escape for the safety of Massimo Ficcadenti's defence. So yeah, it's just generally done okay, but he's going to struggle, I think. And yeah, the Antlers have started pretty well. There's going to be issues, but they're going to be fun to watch, I suppose. What have you made of Shonan, Ben? Quite close to you. What have you made of them? Did they brought in like Yonimoto and Nagaki, but they don't really seem to have solidified Shonan at all. They seem to be conceding a few more goals than last season.
Yeah, I was quite positive over the off season that their ins and outs, Sam, and especially I expected that Nagaki and Yonimoto would add some steel to the midfield, but they're being played around quite a lot, aren't they? And I guess Yonimoto isn't the oldest, you can certainly see that both of them have got a lot of miles on their tires, and they're probably while a very experienced duo, they probably do need other players around them to do a lot of running for them. So overall, I think while there have been signs here and there of decent football from Sean O'Neill. Ultimately, they can't really have too many complaints about where they sit after five games. But while it is still fairly bunched up in the early going, they're going to hope that have to hope that they can nick a couple of wins here, so they they don't get cut adrift once you know a couple of months have been played. So it was good for Sagawa to get his goal here, obviously, finally, eventually given by the VAR. And otherwise, it's been fairly slim pickings. They're going to be relying on Shuto Machino and for a lot of their goals. And again, that's I'm not sure how far that can take you. I guess, they've got a serviceable enough squad. And at the during the preseason, I was quite hopeful that that would at least see them finish better than at least three or four other teams. The early returns haven't been great, but I still think they've got enough about them to at least keep them interested in staying up for most of the campaign. So we'll wait and see on that, Johnny. I don't know. Have any seeds of hope, do you think, for Sean and supporters from what you've seen in the first month or so of the season?
I think they'll be hard to beat, but again, like we said in pre-season, I think I sent a question in like, scoring goals is going to be tough because they're already bottom of the league and they're already the joint lowest scorer. And even the goal in this game, it's like pinball and Antler's goal, and then the ball just no more gets over the line. I think, if you're relying, you say, like on Machino or Wellington, or even Sagawa's been playing as a centre forward when he was more in a withdrawn role at Kashiwa. I'm not sure that's going to get you too many goals. And then, like I mentioned about the Kashima midfield was full of attack, the Shonan midfield triangle was like Nagaki, Yonemoto and Tanaka. There's not much attacking impetus there. And I think it's worth pointing out, although Nagaki's been at a very high level at Kashima, he didn't actually start any league games last season. So maybe a bit like, like Gabriel Xavier is just going to Sapporo, like players with a big reputation, but they haven't played a lot for a season or two. There might be issues with rustiness and also getting up to full fitness. So, I kind of get the feeling that Nagaki, Yonemoto, Tanaka, they might be the three objectively best central midfielders at the club, but I don't really see that as being the best midfield trio. And also, I know Shonan are not as trigger happy as other clubs, but Yamaguchi doesn't have a ton of experience coaching at the top level. I just wonder if they might be, you might get quite short odds on him being the next one to go. What do you think about that, Sam?
Yeah, I think he's probably leading the sack race if that was a thing in Japan. I just don't see it at the moment. It's very, it's kind of pedestrian, that is the way I'd probably describe them, both at the back and in midfield. Like the three centre backs are Yamamoto at 36, then you've got Oiwa and Ono both 32. And I just think maybe if you just put Tachi into the back and drop Tanaka into the back line and then have Sugioka, just freshen that up, and then you can bring in a few more attacking players into that midfield. Maybe, drop Sagawa deeper, maybe bring in Yamada, who hasn't barely played this season but was kind of a regular last year and just was that link between midfield and attack. I mean, it's still going to have issues, but I don't think the players there are the greatest in attack. Sagawa's probably the best of the bunch, but he's not prolific. You're not going to get much out of Tarik Onyewusi as much as I'd hoped for it. And out of a match, you might get five apiece from all of them. So it's going to be difficult. But I think they just need to freshen up a little bit at the back. I think they're a bit stale and a bit easy to walk through at the moment. So that's how I would do it. Drop Tanaka deep and just try and get a bit more energy into that team to overcome the lack of necessary quality going forward.
All right, then. So, well done to Antlers for turning that game around on Saturday. And as you said, moving up to third in the table, Belmare remain at rock bottom after five games. The team that Antlers moved above in the table and up to third are, of course, Kashiwa Reysol, whose positive start to the season continued with an away draw at Nagoya in the only game played on Sunday this past weekend. Both of these goals in this game came inside the first 20 minutes and were terrific strikes as well, it must be said. Mal Hosoya gave visitors Reysol a six-minute lead with a very fine strike at Mitch Langerak's near post. And then in the 18th minute, Mateus, now known, of course, as Mateus Castro, equalised for Grampus with an excellent strike, a trademark Mateus effort with his left foot that gave Kim Sung-yu no chance at all in the Kashua net. But then for the rest of this game, well, yeah, it was highlighted by a brilliant goalkeeping at either end from Kim and Langerak to keep this game level at 1-1. And that is how it finished. A running theme on this week's episode, Sam, appears to have been teams struggling to find reliable goal scorers, and Graham Freche is of a similar mind for his favourites, of course, Nagoya, mentioning the likes of Kanazaki Kakitani and of course the absent Jakob Svierchok, and he mentions Noriyoshi Sakai, who has started a lot in the early going, and Graham Freche says he seems overwhelmed with the responsibility to be the solo centre forward, which he isn't in the first place. So he's not laying any blame at all at the feet of Sakai, I think, Grant Freche. But this lack of reliable goal scorer, it also appears to have stretched to the Toyota Stadium as well.
Yeah, and I think we've said this a number of times. If they've not got Jakub Svierchok up there, there isn't really an out-and-out goal scorer. I like Mukanazaki, but he's had a lot of injury issues, and generally, he's never really been that prolific a goal scorer. He's more of a player that runs into the channels and creates space for others rather than him scoring a lot of goals. And you're not going to get it out of Kakitani either. I think he's been dropped in the last two squads. And there's Sakai, willing runner. He caught lightning in a bottle a little bit last season at Tosu with the goals that he scored when moving into that centre-forward position. But yeah, last week it just didn't look like a striker that was, first of all, confident in where he was, and it didn't look like a clinical goal scorer either. So yeah, there are going to be issues there. We've still not heard anything about Jakub Svierchok after the AFC suspended him towards the end of last year. So yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there. And they're just so heavily reliant still on Mateus to score most of the goals, and yeah, there's only so far he can take them, even though he's got maybe a slightly more of a license this year under Hasegawa than Ficadenti, but still, yeah, just heavily reliant on him. And the team, I don't think, have played too well after that first game against Kobe, where they looked really good, and we just thought, okay, Nagoya are a really good team, but maybe it was just Kobe weren't very good, because Nagoya haven't really reached those heights since. There may be an issue where they missed their second game against FC Tokyo, but that was called off due to the COVID cases. Maybe they just got out of a rhythm and haven't been able to find it, because in that first game, Leo Silva was really good, and just playing from deep, the way that he can just motor through, even at 36, he can get from box to box very quickly and play those through passes. And Keio Sento, especially in that first game, I thought was really good, that link up behind the striker. But again, he's not really performed too well in the last couple of games. So that really is the story about Nagoya and their signings. It started off really well and have just taken a couple of steps back in the last few games.
All right, well, that's neatly surmised for us. So thank you, Sam. And you also touched on Sento there, who, Graham Freche wanted to get our thoughts on. So we'll wrap up this episode, Johnny, then, I guess, by chatting about Kashua, who I think are everybody's biggest surprise packets so far. Deservedly sitting fourth in the table after five games. A decent enough point here away from home. And, a team that a lot of us had in the bottom three of our J-Preds are doing the business up at the other end of the table. An excellent goal here from Hosoya, but I guess the two biggest ins for them in the off-season were also in attack, where a Douglas and a Tomoya Koyamatsu came in. And, both have already gotten on the score sheet. Unfortunately, Douglas didn't feature in the squad in this particular game, but Koyamatsu has come in to start the last couple of games. So, both of them have had positive impacts on the squad so far. I think you'd agree.
Yeah, I'm quite happy, because it seems like any time I come on here, I'm always slagging off Kashiwa and Shimizu for mistakes they're making. And I've actually got nice things to say about Kashiwa this time. So it feels pretty good. I think, Koyamatsu got the assist for Hosoya's goal. It was a beautiful flick round the defender to set Hosoya away. And I think he maybe picked up an injury in pre-season, so he wasn't in the squad right from the start. But yeah, he's kind of gradually worked his way in, and I think he's going to be a really good, really important player for them, especially with Cristiano leaving last winter, and also as Sam mentioned, like Kamiya went to Shimizu, and Douglas, I almost feel like Douglas's biggest role at Kashiwa could be in helping Hosoya develop, because I was really impressed with him in this game, because last season when I saw him, I thought this season compared to last year, he looked bigger and stronger, and he was better able to battle it out with the defenders. And also a word I definitely wouldn't have used about him last year was clinical, but that was an absolutely clinical finish against Nagoya last weekend. So, I mean, if he can work with Douglas and become a better player, he could be a big player not only in Kashiwa's future, but also, as you mentioned earlier, the kind of dearth in strikers, like central strikers in Japanese football in general. He could make himself a very, very important player very quickly. I wanted to quickly mention just a couple of players who, again, are not new signings, but they might as well be. He's been mentioned several times already. Matias Savio, again, I think he really has stepped up with Cristiano being out, and he's taken the mantle on. I think Kashiwa, especially in the second half, that kind of 10-minute spell they were on top, really carved Nagoya open a couple of times, and he was at the heart of it, as was, well, I'm going to call him Dodi. I know the commentators call him like Dodge or Dodgy, which I can't repeatedly say with a straight face. So I'm going to go with Dodi. I hope he's okay with that. But I think that was his first start of the season, and he came in late last season and was, I think he had a few injury problems. But at the base of that midfield, I think he kept things moving pretty well. And yeah, if you'd asked me to predict this game before the start of the season, I would have said a home win. But yeah, I was very impressed with. I've seen Kashiwa three times. I've been very impressed each time I've seen them play. I didn't have them on a bottom three. I certainly didn't have them as an ACL contender either, though I don't think their fans did. But yeah, they're definitely going well so far this season. I mean, Sam, would you go along with that, or would you add anything else?
Yeah, they've been very impressive. I was harsh on them at the start of the season because they got a lot of decisions go for them, and they were playing against teams down to 10 men or whatnot. But last few games, they've not necessarily got the results that they may have wanted, especially at Kashima and then this game. But I think they've been very impressive. Those three, although it was for Sawyer in this game, but the three usually with Douglas and Kuematsu and Matteo Savio is a very good three, especially the way that Matteo Savio has just come on out of nowhere this season. Yeah, him and Kuematsu, especially behind the striker, you got a lot of creativity, a lot of talent there, and it's enough to probably win a few games on their own, those three. And yeah, Hosoya, if he can learn from Douglas, who I think when he has played has just got that bit between his teeth. He had that time at Kobe where he was just on the periphery of things, but now he's got a chance to be the main striker, and he looks like he's up for the challenge, and looks like, yeah, he's still had a few injury issues, but when he has played, he looks very good, and he can be, as you say, that role model for Hosoya, who's finished against Nagoya, was out of nowhere compared to what he was last season. So that's great to see, only 20. So yeah, they're a really good signs for Kashiwa. I mean, yeah, I have them very firmly in my bottom three, and I think most people did, so well done to you for managing to break away from that. But yeah, they've been really impressive, so hopefully they can continue that. I think there are still holes in this team that may go, and maybe one or two injuries to those key players might really affect them. But yeah, generally they've played superbly and deserve to be where they are in the league.
Yeah, most definitely. And as we said, yeah, despite losing the lead on Sunday, yeah, another creditable point away from home against Nagoya. So Reysol's positive start to the season continues, and yeah, they get to enjoy their international break. So yeah, listeners, that's it then. We've finally gotten to the end of the line after chatting about the Samurai Blue at the start of the episode. We've now rounded up all of the 9 games. Been recording for well over 2 hours, but hey, it's an international break and you've got nothing else to do, have your listeners. So yeah, plenty of great listening for you to get through indeed over the couple of weeks of the international break. Though of course we will be back after Japan's second World Cup qualifier against Vietnam with well, hopefully, fingers crossed, an automatic ticket to Qatar punched for the Samurai Blue. Although of course, as an Australian, mean? Yeah, it's always tears me up to to have to see the Socceroos go through the playoffs, which again is not confirmed as we record on Monday night, so I don't want to tempt fate either way. But that's how it's looking, isn't it? With the two games of the final round of qualifying to go. All right, so we will leave it there, Johnny. It's been absolutely terrific to catch up with you again. Wasn't sure how this exercise was going to go with rounding up all of the performances of the new players into J1 clubs so far this season. But thanks for all of your input and thoughts and opinions on the top flight through five rounds. And we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks again for having me on, Ben. I don't know if this is a record podcast time. It's definitely a record for me being on, but it's been very enjoyable, and hopefully the listeners, I'm sure you didn't agree with everything I said, but yeah, hopefully you got some valuable insights and you can enjoy in the international break. Thanks again.
Absolutely brilliant stuff from you, as always, Johnny. Thanks again. And as I say, we look forward to catching up with you again. Sam, terrific stuff from all of us, I think, on this episode. We can be very proud of this episode. Yes, it might be setting a new J-Talk record, but, I couldn't think of a better podcast to do it with.
No, it's been great fun. Yeah, two hours, 40 minutes have flown by, and it's been great. It's got to be a record. I mean, we've done 2 hours a few times, but I think we've notched over that. So, yeah, great. It goes really quickly, and it's great to always have Johnny on. I think it's been a good discussion on, and we've managed to give, I think, every club their credit and their due. So, yeah, good. Yeah, so hopefully we can do this again. Maybe once we've got a few more players, we've got those players that haven't played so far, the foreign imports, so maybe we can touch on them again in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, most definitely. And once the Yusuke Matsuo is up to speed, we'll be spending about 20 minutes each episode chatting about him, I'm sure. So, plenty of value added for the listeners in the weeks and months to come. No question. All right, Sam. Well, yeah, that's it. Then you can take Pickle out for a walk now, where our work here is done. So all that's left for me to do is to thank Graham Freche for his questions on this week's episode. Thanks to Devin, our newest patron who came on board in the past week. If you'd like to get involved, please visit patreon.com/jtalkpod. Of course, so we'd like to thank Johnny once again for his time on this week's episode, and we'd like to thank you, listener, for listening wherever you are. And so we'll be back next week to round up the two Samurai Blue World Cup qualifiers. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk Podcast. Yes, 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 yes.